weekends to complete it all. So we're biting the bullet this year and asking for a full-time account clerk typist to help us with that side of things, and it will also allow us to redistribute some of the other work and help the airport to become more efficient. Contracts, the other additional expense, there's a couple of contracts that we've added this year that will impact the budget, primarily because of the additional living wage clause. That was our choice to pay that, or to follow the county recommendation. But that has impacted our budget, and we're only showing 14,000. It's actually more like 30,000 for the two contracts, but it's offset by reductions elsewhere. There is the full-time equivalent. You'll see in 2012 we had 14.5, which was a half-time position. We tried that. It didn't really work.
Back a little bit.
Thank you. We did without that half-time position in 2013 and got into some trouble. So 2014 we're showing a full position, which will allow Roxanne to take vacation and not have to come back and spend 3 weeks catching up on all the work that's accumulated in the meantime. Will also allow us to, for all of us to go to meetings without having to close down the office, which happens periodically. This is one of Kevin's mandatory slides. I have no idea what an OTR is, and we don't have any anyway.
It's a new aircraft,
Bob. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
It's like the ATR, only it's an OTR.
Yeah. Except the 59 after it, OTR 59.
Nothing, there's a whole list of minor things in the new equipment, total of 66,000. The only major things in that list are terminal furniture. We typically budget $10,000 a year to replace, systematically replace the furniture. We didn't replace any this year, so we're doubling up next year. We spent the money on something else this year that was more important, more urgent. Replacing the fuel management system will allow us to keep a better eye on individual vehicles and figure out what our emissions are and how efficient each vehicle is. And I just added there at the bottom Chevy Volt. That's on a three-year lease. It's not a big expense. We found that it's better to do that. We'll only have a $3,000 a year hit on the budget as opposed to something like $30,000. And we stay in touch with technology, and in 3 years' time, if it's a good vehicle, we can continue the lease, or more likely replace it with something that is better. We had this replacing a Prius. Interestingly, the Chevy Volt, and I'm not here to promote Chevy Volts, but just for your general interest, we're averaging about 52 miles per gallon with a Chevy Volt because mostly we're using it for local trips. The average goes down considerably if you go on a long trip with it. But when you plug it in overnight, you get about 45 to 50 miles on the battery without using any gasoline. So we're guardedly pleased with it right now. We've only had it this year. That's really it in terms of the budget, unless you've got any questions about the operational budget. These are the projects that are we're planning on for 2014, replacing the taxiway lights with LED lighting, which will cut down on the amount of electricity we use. Design of the runway overlay, that is actually surprisingly 20 years old in 2015 since we last overlaid the runway, and you may recall that we spent some money on filling a giant crack that developed this year, and the runway itself is perfectly safe, but it's getting very old and it's in need to be replaced. 2013, we've been doing the design for a terminal apron expansion that would allow for more aircraft parking and increase the size of the de-icing pad so that we can de-ice more aircraft at the same time. The fire truck and the snow plow are both 18 years old now, and they're both in need of replacement. And finally, you will recall that we let a contract for a feasibility study for the terminal to incorporate baggage screening equipment, and to relocate the TSA. It involves an expansion of the terminal at the back and also an expansion of the passenger area to make up for the space we'll be taking to accommodate TSA offices. So, all told, the expected cost of that is about $5 million. Before that happens, of course, we've got to find a way to pay for it. What I'm recommending is use of passenger facility charges, because that's about the only thing available to us other than including it in the airline rates and charges, which would not be very popular with the airlines. So that won't happen until we have the funding sewn up, and that you will at some point get a presentation from CNS on the whole project, and before any construction takes place, we'll have to do a design contract as well. So you'll get a full picture of what needs to be done or what's recommended to be done, and that will come with a recommendation for funding. On the sustainability front, you're aware that we have a solar array project on the books. We're waiting for a NYSERDA grant to come through, which I believe will be sometime this month, later this month. If they announce that they have awarded the grant to us or to Solar Liberty, then they will probably do the solar construction next year. And that will be going in the open field next to Borg Warner on the other side of the road from the airport. So that's property we own. It's a 1.3 megawatt solar array. It's about two-thirds the size of Cornell's solar array, which I think is going to the town planning, the Town of Lansing Planning Board on October 7th. Anyone flying into Ithaca will see two giant solar arrays, and it'd be a good advertisement for what we're all about. Other things we're working on, We're looking at various species of low-growing grass that we only have to mow once a year. Once we find a suitable type of grass that stands up to the various climate changes in this county, we will systematically go ahead and replace all the grass on the airfield over a course of many years. Our recycling center will be close to the terminal, and that's there to make available a place to recycle the materials that come in on aircraft. So empty cans, anything recyclable that comes in on US Airways or Delta or United, there will be an availability of having a place to put those things instead of carrying them around on the aircraft. And just to remind you that any capital projects that we do in the design phase, we have a team member who is an expert in sustainability and sits in and gives his or her input on what would make that project more sustainable. And the challenges of 2014 are pretty much the challenges that we faced in 2013. The contract tower issue is wrapped up with sustainability. And although they have both Congress, well, House and Senate and the White House have appropriated money for contract towers, that is based on sustainability going away, and I don't know whether that will happen. So that's just...
You meant sequestration, I think.
What did I say?
Sustainability.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Okay. I was reeling there.
Yes, sorry. Sequestration. Yes.
You'd be concerned about sustainability of the federal government.
No, sequestration, which is holding a lot of people hostage. Anyway, so that issue is still with us. And what it's done this year is to cause people to be uncertain about the airport and have caused people to go to other airports, principally Syracuse, to fly. We're trying to find a way to combat that. But the obvious remedy is for a permanent solution to the contract tower issue. And just to continue the good news, you're aware that we're carrying about 130,000 from TSA, which is a part unfunded mandate for having law enforcement officers at the security point. The latest thing from the TSA is they now want us to provide our own staff for the exit lane and actually give up the responsibility for keeping an eye on people coming and going through the exit. And I don't need to tell you, I haven't worked out the numbers of what that would cost us, but we're liable to get into another legal battle with the TSA over that. I'm thinking that we may have to get Jonathan involved in a similar thing that we did with the contract towers to postpone what seems to be the inevitable, which is that we will take responsibility. But there are technical ways of doing that that don't involve manpower. There are technical systems that will control an exit lane that can be funded through the Airport Improvement Program or some other fund, some other government fund, that wouldn't involve a steady drain on our budget. And that's something that I heard today. It's brand new. We have the American Association of Airport Executives are working on it with all the other airports in the country who are up in arms about it. And they are discussing having a combined lawsuit against the TSA, which we might get involved in. But that's for the future, and it's just not particularly good news. It's kind of depressing and fits in with all the other stuff that's going on these days.
Pam, could we get to the end, please?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I thought he had gotten to the end.
No, I think we have one more.
That is it, actually.
All right. Yeah. Let me get your hands up, and we'll start with a question. Pam, who's after? Peter?
Peter.
I want to take the first shot, though. Okay. Pat, and over in this side of the room, Will. Bob? Okay, I got everyone. With the what I've heard and what I understand to be true, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that we're losing passengers because of a variety of things. The employment numbers are down. Do you and the Air Services Board think it's are you going to develop, or do you need to develop a maybe more aggressive marketing plan so that we can kind of recover some of those numbers? Is that something you're talking about?
That's exactly what we're planning on doing, yes. We put in a grant request for additional air service, which was not successful. We just heard last week that we didn't get that grant. So the next step is to ramp up our marketing and try and get our passengers back that way.
Do you have money for that? Is that something that you have funded?
We can make it available, yes. But I'm thinking that we probably will end up spending twice as much as we normally do.
All right. Thank you for that. We're going to start over here. Pam, go ahead.
Well, if that was what passenger leakage was, then I don't have a question. Was that what you meant by
yes.
passenger leakage?
Okay,
Peter. I have a couple of questions. If I can remember them. Let's see. Oh, how big is this solar array in linear dimension? Roughly.
About 100,000 square feet.
100,000 square feet. So that's what? That's 300 feet on a side? That's what it sounds like. 100,000 square feet?
Yeah, something like that.
Goodness me. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty big.
Okay. Have you thought about whether or I wonder how much of our airplane traffic is Cornell connected, and I wonder, and of course Cornell regulates that traffic to a certain extent, and I wonder if that's a possibility of the leakage, because I would have thought the old argument about the instability of the tower would have gone away by now. I mean, no one thinks in the month of June that the tower is going to be gone in July or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but have you?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think initially it did have some impact, but there are probably other reasons now for that leakage. People establish a pattern, and they stick to it. In terms of Cornell, my understanding is that the faculty and staff spend something like $40 million a year on air travel. But it's decentralized, so there used to be a time when it was all organized through a travel department. That doesn't happen now.
Uh-huh. So there's no easy way to get that number.
No. You know, it's one of those things, though, that if people stop using this airport, the air service will diminish and go away. So they, you know, if it's important to Cornell and to other entities in this community, they need to understand that, because if it goes away, it will be very difficult to get it back.
Yeah. Well, maybe they could give you that information. Probably the majority of it goes through the grants that Cornell has. One other thing I was interested in. Did I understand you right in the beginning that you are by yourself going to raise the salaries of a number of people? I don't know, you didn't say how many that were below the living wage, and that you're...
No, the cleaning contract and the airport ambassador contract, which were approved this year, incorporate language for living wage, and that was an increase over what it was prior to that. So,
okay, and how did you pay for that?
It's in the budget, and we have made cuts in other areas to accommodate that.
I'm just curious what you can't directly say.
Peter, excuse me. Joe has wants
just,
to weigh
just
in.
Just a note. I don't think this is the first time the living wage has been a part of at least one of those contracts, if not both. What happened, though, is the living wage went up by 8% this year, so that may be reflected there. But I believe the custodial contract has been a living wage contract.
Yes.
Historically.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure about the ambassador. I can't recall if the ambassador is also living wage.
Yes, these were five-year contracts. So, you know, over the course of 5 years, the living wage has gone up considerably.
Okay, the reason I asked the question is that I'm just trying to get some feel for how much money it costs to pay people a living wage.
My recollection, Peter, is that 5 years ago, the minimum we were asking people to be paid on the same contract was $10 an hour. Now it's $12.62.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to go right around the room. Pat, you're next, and then Mike. Did you have your hand up? I'll be over on that side. Did you have your hand up, Dave?
Actually, I do have a question.
Okay, so you're next after Pat. Go ahead, Pat.
You mentioned paying for something that I didn't quite understand. I believe it was in the list of capital projects, and I think you talked about increasing a fee or charging.
Oh, yes.
Could you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Terminal expansion is estimated to be, if we do everything that is being recommended, in the vicinity of $5 million. When you buy a ticket to fly from Ithaca, that includes a fee of $4.50, which is called a passenger facility charge. And that accumulates, since we are boarding about 120,000 passengers a year, that adds up to somewhere around 500,000 a year. That can be used to pay off debt service on a project of that size.
If you were to do that, I mean, what's it being used for? Would you have to divert it from its current?
There are a number of projects that it's being used for now, but they are due to be paid. Most of that is the terminal, 1994 terminal. Debt service on that is due to be retired in 2018, and... You know, we can add other projects whenever we feel like it, as long as we feel like we can pay them off in a reasonable length of time.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, Bob, did you... this is the second snowplow. Didn't we replace one about 2 years ago?
We replaced I think it was a multi-purpose unit, which was a snowblower and a broom. This is a pure snowplow.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mike.
I had four small things. One, I guess this is for Joe. Joe, do you have to approve the new position that Bob is asking for in his department? Or how does that
work? Part of the recommended budget, so I think what I need to do is done. Yeah.
Okay. Another thing, Bob, there was talk about a new roof for the terminal. Was that done, or does it have to be done?
Yes, that was completed.
It was completed. Okay. I've been off that committee, so sorry I didn't know that. The new fire truck, I know when they had that awful accident, where was it? In California. and the fire trucks hit those passengers, they said that they weren't equipped with some kind of a warning device. And I would think that something like that, when it's spec'd, would be a good thing to have on a new fire truck.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that was, I think, obscured by the foam that was lying on the ground. Yeah.
Well, they said I read about that anyway. That's my thought. And the last thing is about the low grass. I'd like to know it because I hate mowing half as much as we do in the summer.
You'll have to stand in line.
But seriously, wouldn't that be more likely to attract geese? Because they like low grass.
No, actually, there's a particular height that geese like, and as long as it's 6 inches or below, they're okay. They like to hide in the tall grass.
No, I always heard it just the opposite. I always heard they like the low grass because they're afraid of foxes and other things in the tall grass. I don't know. I'm no expert, but maybe our wildlife could look at that.
We had a wildlife hazard assessment done, and that was his recommendation.
Thank you.
We're going to keep on going here, Martha. Let me remind Dave, we're halfway through here, all the way through this 30 minutes. This is a enterprise operation. Go ahead, Martha.
Bob, hi. I'm sorry I was late. In terms of passenger leakage or drop-in employments, advertising is one thing, but the bottom line is the fares, comparison of fares. How are we doing, you know, if you pick some typical travel routes, how do we compare to Syracuse and Elmira and Binghamton?
I checked the fares yesterday, as a matter of interest, and of the 12, I check our fares against Elmira, Binghamton, and Syracuse, and they're in line with, completely in line with Elmira and Binghamton. There are three or four in Syracuse that, you know, if you were interested in saving money and not worried about the drive up there and the winter weather and all that stuff, it would be worthwhile going to Syracuse. So we have a consultant, and we're working with him to see if he can do anything to get those fares lowered so they're in line with Syracuse's.
That does fit with what I've heard recently from some people that they would have liked to fly here, but it was just more expensive and it was worth going to Syracuse.
All right. The other thing, of course, is that it's a bigger airport and there are more nonstop flights from Syracuse. You know, all ours have to go through hubs, and so that's another attractive thing for some people.
Brian.
Mine was asked.
Leslie. Will.
Same question. I would point out that Syracuse seems to be on a 10-year plan to redo their terminal, and it's been mostly boarded up internally. I don't know if that's changed, Bob, but it's not a pleasant experience.
They just opened a new extension. well, they don't have the same friendly staff that we have.
There you go. There you go.
Thank you. Carol.
So I have two questions. On the budget page, you talk about local revenues and other revenues, section 4, page 1, and it's carried throughout. Can you tell us what's the source of local revenues and what are the sources of other revenues?
Local revenues is simply rates and charges and rentals from our tenants. And the other sources of revenues are federal and state grants.
Okay, thanks. And then on the leakage issue, our staff is great, and the airport and the board do a lot to try to counteract some of the negative experiences people have traveling that have nothing to do with us. And maybe there's more that we can do, but I'm just wondering, what methods do you use to study the causes of the leakage? Because from the experience of people I know who travel either for business or family reasons or pleasure, I think there's a perception that the sense of how difficult it is to travel and how many flights, how there are fewer flights leaving from Ithaca, that the connections, the flights get canceled, the connections aren't made. There's often two connections, not one, that you've got to make in between. And so it's that having to counteract that, the convenience of traveling in Ithaca and the pleasure of it is there. But so how do you know? And maybe we could do a better job of finding out.
Carol, please let him answer the question. Okay.
The primary reason people go elsewhere is the fare. If you can find a fare that is much cheaper somewhere else and it's not too far away, people will do that. The next reason is convenience, which is non-stop flights. So if they have a non-stop flight to Chicago, or you have a choice of going through Philadelphia to Chicago, many people will choose the non-stop flight. In terms of other hurdles that we have to overcome, most of them are beyond our control. Things like air traffic control at Newark, Philadelphia, weather in those two places. And it's evidenced by, you know, if you want to look at the number of passengers and the number of people who get on Delta, it's because Delta goes via Detroit, which is, you know, mostly avoiding those kind of reasons for delay. So that really, if you look at the Delta numbers and the Delta load factors, you understand that most regular travelers have figured it out.
Yeah, so I guess my question really, I guess, is what do you do to study the issue so that then, what do you do to study the issue? Rather than rely on our perceptions.
Well, those aren't perceptions. Those are realities. And I don't know what we can do about it because those are the hubs that the airlines choose to use.
Frank, last question, please.
Bob,
all right. No, go ahead, Frank.
Bob, what a couple also, and I realize it's an enterprise operation, but start with the new employee. What happens if you don't get that employee?
Then we will continue to be inefficient.
Okay. go down. I'm looking at page 1 of section 4. The all other contract services up from 2011 by about 140,000. Is it just what's driving the increase in the cost?
Page 4.
It's section 4, page 1.
Joe, do you want to jump in here now?
I'll come back, though.
Okay. All right.
I'm not sure I have that.
Well, in 2011, the all other contract services were about 571,000, and the target for 2014 is about 717,000. I'm just curious as to what contract or contracts. All other contract services.
It's right under professional services, Kevin.
It's about two-thirds of the way down the page.
So it goes from 703,000 in 2013 to 716.
Yeah, but I was going back to 2011, 2 years ago. It was 571.
I think what's included in that is the additional amount of money we now have to pay for the LEO that's not funded by the TSA. think that's what the big increase was.
That's beyond your control.
Right.
And almost the last question. On the program expense, right under that contract line, what is being reduced that you're saving money there?
The program expense is a mechanism to balance one side with the other. What it really means is that we are making or expect to make a loss of whatever it is, 60-odd thousand. It's just the way the cost center is set up. What it means is that at the end of the year, if that's what happens, we make a loss of 60-odd thousand, then under our airline agreement, we hand the bill, 75% of that bill, to the airlines to pay in their rates and charges for the following year.
That's your fund balance, use of fund balance.
The fund balance.
Yes. Yeah.
Bob, go back to the passenger facility charge for just a second. If I heard you right, I thought that was Pat was sort of asking the question I want to ask. If we're looking for the PFC to cover, I thought I heard you say we were going to hopefully take some of that money and cover the new fire truck, new snowplow. If the leakage is causing fewer people to fly or fly to here, where will we have to delay the purchase of these two pieces of equipment? I see they're under capital programs, but
no, I expect to get those passengers back. If we don't get them back this year, then over time I think they will come back. In terms of what we are losing, it's currently around 10 or 11%. So if you estimate 500,000 in revenue from PFCs in a bad year, with if it continues to be 11%, we'll be down to about 450,000 in PFC revenues, but still certainly enough to pay off those things. Yeah, just take a little bit longer, that's all.
Are we going to form a new airport development committee to design the expansion?
I think that would be a good idea.
Kathy, last question. Go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Bob. It's nice to see you here. As you know, I'm always thrilled that you managed to get the things done with the airport as an enterprise. It's something that I'm always concerned about, because I do think that a great deal of the benefit from the airport goes to Cornell, and to it's a kind of a lopsided benefit. So the fact that it's a enterprise is helpful. I'm going to start off just offering a suggestion. You may be way ahead of me on this, and I've already done it, but in going door to door, one of the things that younger couples and people of a different generation than me talked about is that they really don't want to fly that much because they see it as unsustainable. However, one thing that I discovered is that they are willing to pay carbon offsets. So they'll go to a booking site that offers the possibility for paying a little extra. And obviously, these are in different straits than the folks that feel that, you know, they have to drive to Syracuse to save $100. But this is another part of the equation, that if there was a way that the airport website, for example, could offer some guidance in that direction for people, there might be a way it would engage a demographic that is having a tendency to, you know, they'll carpool, they'll forego the flight, they'll, you know, figure out something else. And there's a way that I think that air travel can be seen as sustainable, and offering carbon offsets is one way to, as you were saying, establish those habits. So that's just a suggestion for...
Well, just as a matter of interest, we have two laptop computers at the airport which are tuned into a website sponsored by Sustainable Tompkins, and you can offset your air travel monetarily through those sites.
I flew out of Tompkins recently, and I was real pleased with that. Is there a way that that shows up on our website?
I believe it's on our website. Yes.
Awesome. That's great. And is it do you have to drill down to it, or is it on the front?
Yeah, I think so. It's There are other things that people are more interested in, but it's certainly you can get to it easily.
Yeah, it could show a commitment to sustainability. The second piece, also related to sustainability, as you might imagine, I'm interested in the solarized Tompkins project. I think the solar arrays right now at the airport is a fantastic idea. The only thing I could think of would be better is to establish an airstream park for airstreams to be able to. Nobody's laughing. Joe understands. No, I think it's a great thing. I'm always interested in local aspects of the project, and I'd just like you to confirm for me what I've heard, and that is that Solarized Tompkins purchases photovoltaic arrays or components that are manufactured in the United States. And the second part of that question, as you know, always involves local labor. And if we're using local labor, that pays prevailing wage. So anything you can tell me about those things, I'd appreciate.
We haven't gotten to that point yet because we're still waiting on the grant. And I haven't got into any real details with it. It would be with Solar Liberty, which is the same organization that's putting solar panels on 7 buildings in the county. In terms of the airport, there is no cost to the airport, no maintenance, no installation costs, and it's there for 20 years until we ask them to take it away. What we get for providing them the ground space, and that's all we're really doing, is giving them space in a field that we can't use for any other reason, is about a 12 to 15% saving on our electricity bill every year.
So just as a follow-up, I'll say that I think that project is excellent. I think there's some flexibility involved, is my understanding, and that certainly the vendor would be open to suggestions with regard to procurement. So I'm hoping as a continuation of sustainability, we think about manufacturing jobs in New York State and in the United States. And, of course, local employment is in the front of everybody's mind these days. So thanks very much.
And, thank you.
Joe.
Yeah, just very quickly, coming back to Frank's question about the additional position that was added to this budget. I think during the course of his presentation, Bob made it pretty clear what this position was all about. But I want you to know how seriously we take requests to add new positions to this budget. And when you look at a $3 million operation like the airport and you realize that the entire administration of that airport, really the purely administrative side of the airport, is being run by Bob Nicholas, Roxanne Noble, and to some degree Tony Rudy, who shares some responsibilities elsewhere on the airport. So in terms of an administrative structure, it is very, very lean. We think to a point where it's a real concern. So when Roxanne is not there to do the ordinary work of keeping track, not only of the ordinary accounting kind of things at the airport and purchasing, but also managing those construction contracts, being able to account for those, when she's not there, the airport manager has to sit behind that desk and do that kind of work instead of focusing on these incredibly important things that are happening at the airport right now, like what to do with sequestration, how to advance passenger activity, and so forth. So I want you to know that this goes through a pretty rigorous review before it gets into the budget, and the position will be is well needed and will be well applied.
Thank you very much, Bob. Thank you, Joe. Board of Elections.
Thank you.
While you're coming to the back of the room, let me remind you of the Godfather movie, Part One. There's a wonderful scene that Vito Corleone is going to a funeral home where his son Sonny has been murdered on the causeway, and he says to the undertaker, "I want you to use all your power and all your skills. I don't want his mother to see him this way. And after last night's meeting, I don't want your mothers to see you this way either. So we do not want to be here until 10:45. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll try to help in that. Tonight, Elizabeth Cree is ill, so in her stead is Carrie Stamm, the Deputy Republican Commissioner. go over our budget. Looks like we are going down in our expenditures and down in our revenues for the this coming year. Major influences. Our department, we're going to be going into 2014. It's a gubernatorial year, and we have two countywide, in addition to the governor's race, we have two countywide races next year, county clerk and the sheriff. We also have congressional, and there's one U.S. Senate race up. And this gets a little problematic because the state assembly can, and state senate can't seem to agree on putting a federal primary on the same date as the state and local primary. Or maybe I should say it's the other way around, the state and local primary on the same time as a federal. And we went through this dance in 2010 or 2012, and we ended up with an extra election. And I suspect that we are going to be looking at an extra election next year unless, you know, something changes. So that's probably the major hurdle we have next year if we have an extra election. Full-time equivalents, no change. Yeah, actually, go down 3 100. So 10% of a full-time equivalent is our... we have a couple of techs that are on payroll. They don't get benefits. They work probably 20 to 30 hours a year, and they assist in some of the activities that are mandated by law and to make sure that we have the bipartisan sign off on things. And the only over target request that we have is deals with restoring the deputy commissioner on the Democratic side to 40 hours. Back in 2010, the county asked for volunteers to work a shorter work week. Tom Polangeli, the deputy at the time, stepped forward and said he was willing to do it, and even though it kind of went against election law, which says you should have equal participation, we went along with it to help the county through a tough time. Tom resigned effective November or September 30th, 2 days ago, and so we put this OTR in to restore that position to 40 hours. And goals, we're still working with smart technology, still looking at ways to get more done for less, using the technology to our advantage, and we hope to get back to more voter education. It's one of the things that has kind of gone by the wayside over the last couple of years as we've been really working to implement the new voting system. That's it.
Questions? Pat Pryor and Brian.
Steve, with Tom gone, how is that going to impact this election season? What does your hiring process look like? I'm going to assume that you're not going to have someone in that position for this particular election season.
Tom was considered enough to give us 1 month's notice, and appointed my deputy or my senior clerk, Laura Norman, who's been with us for 10 years, to the deputy position. She's been a 40-hour employee. We have just hired a new person for senior clerk that started on October 1st because we need to get somebody in there as we are entering our busy season. So hopefully things will, work out well.
Thank you.
No, actually, I found it. Forget it.
Okay. Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Martha?
I know this isn't a budget question, but a couple times I've looked for, who's running for different offices.
Well, we know you are. I'm sorry.
That would seem like a really basic question that would be great if could be obvious somewhere on the site.
Well, it's on our website. Under there's if you go down the left-hand column of our website, there's four headings. One is for voters, one is for candidates, and one is for, I believe, treasurers, and then the other is additional information. And there's the one that's for candidates that in there is the offices to be filled, which we get notice, at least if you're talking about November elections, we get notice by March, 8 months prior to the election. All the municipal clerks are mandated to let us know what positions they want filled for that year. And as soon as we get that together, we post it to our website along with a political calendar. When the state certifies the primary date, then we can put up. But all that is on our website. I know in the transition we lost a couple of items, but I don't think, but we've restored those, I believe.
I'm not asking for what offices are open or what seats are up for election. I'm asking, you know, like, is the town supervisor on a 2-year cycle? I'm asking for who's running.
Like a sample ballot?
Sure, and that seems like a voter
that will be posted probably within the next few days.
Okay, all right.
Kathy Ware.
Thanks. I know y'all see a lot of us at this time of the year, but in this setting, I know you know this question is coming around election time. I get a lot of questions, and I, in this case, I sort of made up an answer based on what I think I know, but I figured I should probably ask y'all about this. I know that the new ballots are very specific to the voting machine that they're used on, or at least to that voting district. And this year I know that there was a shortage of ballots in some of the locations. What I told people was that as a legislator, we tend to, you know, we're very happy when y'all don't have OTRs. But if you came to us and said you needed an OTR to buy an extra few hundred ballots in every district, we would wonder at the added expense. Now, I don't know how much they are specifically, but the question I have is there a way that you can allow for that, or is it just a kind of a guess that you do based on previous data?
Well, when we're the ballots cost for right now, they cost 48 cents a piece to produce. And historically, since we've gone to the new paper ballot system, we look at voter history to determine our ballot order and boost it by 10 to 20%. We try to anticipate what might be hot races, and I think we certainly underguessed when you know, in the primary that you were just involved in, which we don't like to do. But we're also trying to save, you know, these are 50 cents a piece. So, you know, if you can, you know, buy 20,000 less ballots than you need on a countywide basis, you save $10,000. So we make our best guess. And this is the first time we've been short, and I hope it doesn't happen again.
Well, I just want to thank you all for the way that you handled it, because it, as far as I could tell, considering the situation, I thought it was handled really well by the Board of Elections. And I just want to thank you for being flexible when the races do look a little different than what your projection had anticipated. So thanks. And I like what you said. I'm going to write it down so I can tell the more detailed answer than it costs too much.
Will, last question.
Thank you. Building on Martha's point, I, as we were talking, I just went back to the site, and I realized, oh, I've always been able to find that information. But then I realized I knew to look under petitions filed. So the candidate information is there, but you have to know that little thing. The average voter might not. And I think it would be very, very helpful just to make it very clear up front that
It's much more prominent when the petitions are being filed. But in a few days, we're going to have sample ballots for the whole county, and that'll be front and center on our homepage. And,
thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. CCE, you're up.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
So thank you all. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, Kevin's passing around the folder that I bring every year. That's the 10th one or the 11th one, so actually another 89 or so, and you'll have a full box of file folders.
Is that when you intend to retire after 89?
Well, no, I just finished my 10th year. So, and yeah, so 89 more sounds good. But we do, you know, in fact, consider talking about 100. We do have our 100th anniversary party coming up on the 14th, Monday morning, the 14th. You're all invited. I think you've all gotten an invitation. If you haven't, you will. It's a breakfast, and we have some excellent speakers there that day who are going to talk about the challenges that the county faces and the city faces, and you know, where's the value of cooperative extension in helping work on those. So you are all invited. I really hope that you can make it. I also, in your packet, have a couple of other things. There's the First People's Festival, which is this weekend. I have, if people want, there's green building maps for the green buildings tour that's taking place this weekend and Saturday and Sunday. And I didn't bring application forms for the Glow Run, which is taking place on Saturday night, but if you wanted to go to that, we can just let us know. He's running this thing. There we go. Okay, so I'll go right to this. There is attached the multicolored table with the documentation behind it. So I won't go into much detail on that tonight, except to say that, you know, it's color-coded so that the orange is all the programs that we have behind, or that are behind these basic categories that we have on the front page. The green is the value to the county, both in terms of, to the county's budget, the bottom line, both in terms of savings to the county's budget and revenues that come in. There's also the blue is the impact on the county's economy. And the yellow is the local actors, people voting with their feet, and that's including volunteers, participants, or program, or partners we work with, as well as the participants who attend this. And it also includes the 70-some interns who work with us every year, who give us 20 years worth of their time. These are college interns. This year we had 76, I think I said that already. And then the 64,000 hours of volunteer time, or 32 full-time equivalents. So this year for the budget, that we're looking at a slight increase of 11,000 roughly an overall increase in the budget for the year from the county in terms of the revenue appropriation from the county. I will point out that 4 years ago, I think it was, we were at 710,000. So this is still a significant reduction over what we had some years ago. I did want to take a couple seconds just to sort of capture some of what has happened. This is all 2012 data, because we're still obviously dealing with 2013. But in 2012, and the table shows that we worked with 76,000 people. 76,000 people participated in our different programs and courses and so on. 95,000 people used our website. These are unique visitors to the website in 2012. That number is actually up this year. We're on track to be about 140,000. Meeting room usage is 33,000 people. We partnered with over 1,000 different businesses and nonprofit organizations. We do various newspaper columns, and we also are now working in both radio and TV. What it means is, you know, in terms of employment and workforce development, I thought it would be interesting to sort of point out that we actually do have a fair amount of employment, workforce development, and employment development in the county. Even though we don't usually
think of it that way, but when we started pulling it all together, it got kind of interesting. You know, we have over 200 people on payroll ourselves. In addition, there's 142 participated in the youth employment program this year. I mentioned the 76 university interns plus we had 6 high school interns. We partner with 3 other organizations locally to do this Natural Leaders Initiative program, and now there's 175 people who have gone through that program and are basically forming a grad council and doing a number of other things in their own communities. We do quite a bit of work with in terms of support to business owners, a lot of agriculture, obviously, but also energy efficiency, green building, waste, solid waste, you know, so the used secondhand stores, that kind of stuff, transportation providers and others. And then, as I mentioned, the 2,389 volunteers who all, you know, many of them go through relatively intense training. Some have training as much as 80 hours of training. What this means, you know, so the numbers by themselves aren't that important, and it would be great to have stories, but I think it's really important that we are actually, with partners, having significant impact economically. So right now, and for the last 2 years, this region has, Southern Tier region, and it's been led by Tompkins County, have had the highest rates of energy efficiency retrofits in the state. And that's both rates as well as numbers of houses. So, you know, we're one of the smallest regions in the state when it comes to the total number of houses that are eligible for energy efficiency retrofits. And yet even by numbers, we have the highest numbers of retrofits in the state. We do know that it's been in part due to our involvement in it. We get that kind of feedback from local energy efficiency contractors as well. And contractors, we're also now working with folks down in Binghamton and throughout Broome County, and they're saying the same thing there too. We've seen a 400% increase in local food consumption. Our local produce consumption is up to 20% now. Businesses are telling us in the sectors of food, solid waste reduction, so secondhand stores, and energy, that they're seeing increased sales and increased profits. One of the local energy efficiency contractors is talking about increasing his staff size by 50% in the next 3 to 4 years, and he's one of the largest already. $2.3 million brought in from outside of Tompkins County. Cornell's last economic impact statement suggested that for every dollar brought in, it's worth $1.43 in additional sort of economic activity here in the region. So you can multiply that. And one of our more recent things, we've been working now with local nonprofits and helping them raise money. And this past year, they've raised, so this isn't 2012 data, this is 2013. Basically, over the last year, we've helped raise over $100,000 for local nonprofits. And we do that at a net cost of $2.46 a person. So in 2014, what we did with energy efficiency, and what we've been doing historically with agriculture for the last 100 years, is sort of treating the whole thing as a system and trying to figure out where we could leverage our own efforts to strengthen those particular sectors. We've been working on this, and we'll continue to expand our own efforts to really emphasize systems approaches and system strengthening, and doing this with other organizations as well. So there's a group that's been meeting looking at zero to 5 year olds and how to basically ensure that every 0 to 5 year old starts off life in a way that's going to allow that person to achieve his or at least have a reasonable chance of achieving his or her full potential. And that's a group of folks who've been sort of looking at the whole system of child care, of child development from 0 to 5. And we we'll continue to do that with youth development, strengthening family in all its forms, and in economic development. And what this means for in terms of economics is essentially this support for businesses and consumers in these areas. We'll be looking at these systems. We'll continue to look at these systems and work to support them in strategic ways. An increased emphasis on enterprise development and work job skill development with the chronically underemployed and unemployed. And this is something we've been working on with sort of, you may have heard of Building Bridges. So this is Building Bridges approaches and thinking is shaping much of how we're going about that work. And then support for local nonprofits. We'll continue to expand what we're doing with the revenue raising, and also want to are exploring some options for addressing operations elsewhere. I mean, operations of other organizations. Major influences. Most of you know that we've been addressing this issue of regionalization. It's been going on. We've been fighting it for 3 years. We lost, and we do have this regional shared business network. It was pitched as something that would save money. It's actually the net increase in our costs for this coming year are projected to be $160,000. And we ourselves, because we're the largest association in the region, certainly all the other associations were thinking that we should take the biggest hit. We've been able to, and there's nobody around from any other county, right? We've been able to significantly reduce our actual costs. So at one point we were looking at having to pay almost half of the total cost, or the total sort of increase. And we're down now to about $40,000 that we have to pay. Another major influence is a reduction in federal and state funding. The sequestration hit us. We've had rescissions in our food stamp, the SNAP education program, the food stamp education program. We've now had 40% cuts in that over the, and it was all resist money, what would that be? Money that they had given to us and then they took it away. So over the last 2 years, when you compare where we were before to where we are now, it's 40% less. And in both those cases, they took that money away mid-year when we basically had already spent what they were, in fact, almost spent all that they were actually going to start taking away from us. So that's been a major issue. We do get pass-through money from Cornell and that for federal funding, and they've passed on their sequestered fund cuts to us as well. And then we also had a major energy efficiency education contract that we were doing for basically across the entire state, which we were were getting overhead for that, we were able to use for our operations as well, and with that loss, we've had impacts on our operations. So we have these over-target requests. The first one is to pay a portion but roughly 50% of the cost of our increased share of the shared business network. And our strategy there is we've asked for it as one time because when we first began this effort, when we finally agreed that we had to do it, we had set up a 3-year plan that would get us down to cost neutrality. So all of the 8 associations in this region grudgingly agreed that we would do this, but that all the boards, in fact, had said, but it has to be cost neutral. And what that meant for us was, If there was going to be any increased cost related to this, we were going to offset it with revenue that would come from increased performance in some fashion. So we do expect we're on track. Part of the reason that we have been hit by this increased costs this year was, or this coming year, is because Cornell had promised us a lot of money to sort of bank us, or, you know, Cornell Cooperative Extension at the state level had promised us money, and we had a 3-year contract with money built in every year, and the third year was cut. The third year, they just stopped it. So we've been stuck. We've been held. We're paying for that. The second is to pay for the continued development of a staff productivity website, which we've been, this is a website that will allow us to essentially manage, every staff person will have the ability to manage his or her own, pretty much everything that they do, including we'll be able to do onboarding online and automatically. We're actually going through this right now with a staff person where I was able to design, to tailor our onboarding process for a new staff person simply by dragging and dropping different components on my desktop. And so she when she walked in, she had, here's what she needs to do on her first day, here's what she needs to do in her first week, here's what she needs to do in her second week, and so on and so forth. And she can sign off and acknowledge that she's done each of these things as she's done it. There's a lot more that we want to do with this. There, another feature we do have in it is the ability to get to document compliance with things. So with this many staff, there are certain things that New York State requires and the Fed require that we can simply we can send something to somebody, to all the staff, and they can acknowledge electronically that they've received it. They can sign it electronically. It just goes automatically to a database. In some cases, what used to take us 2 or 3 days to do is now taking us 2 hours or even less to do. And since with our increasing compliance requirements, this is going to save us a significant chunk of time. There's other facets. Employee expense reimbursements will be done online as we move forward with this. Trainings can be done. People can request certain things to be pushed to them automatically. It will actually result in significant reductions in the time it takes for us to carry out staff development and training. And there's a few other things that are also in place for this website. And then finally, this last OTR, those first two were recommended for approval by county administration. And then the last one is the cost of living adjustment, which at this time, the total, if you go and look at the COLA, or not the COLA, but the rate, whatever it is, the rate of inflation, the CPI, thank you. I was thinking COI, but no. CPI, it's 8.9% over the last 4 years, since basically the crash. And prior to this year, we had 2% or 1% increase in that time period. So this 1.5% would bring us up to about a third of what the total drop has been, a third of what the CPI increase has been over the last 4 years.
Are you finished? Okay, I had Brian, then Pam. Go ahead.
This is actually kind of a Joe question, and it relates to the last, it appears to be just about half funded from the request. And just for everybody's knowledge, take from 2009 to present day, or actually next year, and the contracts that we've settled with our employees, and how that shakes to what turned out to be your recommendation.
With our own employees, you mean the labor contracts?
Yes.
With our own employees?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
It was first year, I think, was 2010. We had a zero, a $1,250 bonus that did not roll up. So it was a one-time cash bonus, and then a 2% and a 2%. So over that 5-year period of time, county employees realized 4% wage growth in total, with some givebacks on copays that actually netted that down below 4%. So that was our rate of growth in terms of personnel costs for almost all of our employees.
Okay. For the bargaining units that we settled with, there's still right. some outstanding. But
Road Patrol is still out, yeah.
Okay. Just a perspective for folks. So. All right, thanks.
Go ahead, Pam.
I just had a question about the regional shared business network. I blanked on this. What is this?
You want my honest opinion? No.
we're in town.
Neither of us.
No, it's basically Cornell campus said there's a. They themselves have had over the past 10 years or 12 years now a reduction in staff of by more than almost 50%. So there are 56 or 57 associations around the state. The number of associations didn't go down. The number of staff didn't go down out in the associations, but the number of staff on campus went down. Part of the way that they've approached this was they thought if they could basically, instead of working with 56 associations, they could work with 8 regions, it would make it manageable for their staff to work with all of us. And what that means essentially is they're pushing a lot of stuff out to us, stuff in the areas of IT, finance, and HR. So we have formed regions. Initially there were 11 or 12. We've just, as of October 1st, I don't know which date today is, a second, yesterday, we merged into one region that were originally two. Both downs, 8 counties basically stretching from Oswego to Binghamton to Broome. We are all in one region. We have a shared business network. What that means is that we have one lead IT person, one lead finance person, one lead HR person, and these folks are supposed to, they have some record keeping and training duties themselves, but they also have they're mainly focused on training and liaison with campus. And they do a lot of the work that used to be done on campus. It's done by them. We now pay for those. So it used to be that those folks were paid by campus and housed in campus. Now, and not the same people, but the work that they were doing was done by people on campus. Now it's being done by us out in the counties.
I have a follow-up. I guess I still don't quite know what it is that you do. I mean, what?
So, there's a new HR program at Cornell. Some of you are familiar with it, called Workday. The way it works is every county has to initiate their transactions like they would normally do. Now, instead of it being processed and approved on campus, they're all processed and approved at the regional level by somebody who's on our staff. So in the case of HR, they are responsible for ensuring that all of us are in compliance, whereas before all of the compliance requirements were handled by campus.
So this is an internal kind of organization. I mean, this is something...
This is something within Cooperative Extension.
For
yes.
Cooperative Extension.
Yes. Yes.
It's not something that's put together for a network helping businesses or...
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it was actually, they changed the name. It was basically it was regional centers, and then because there was such strong objection, they changed the name to shared business centers. And all the objections went away.
what a clever move. Carol.
I had a question about something totally unrelated. Back on your economic financial impact slide, you referred to a 400% increase in local produce consumption from 5.6% to 20%.
That's not this year. That's not 2012. I should have been.
I just was curious about that. That's quite a success. And I was just curious about if people are consuming more, then obviously it must be producing more. So where's it coming from? What's the impact on the larger market? Tell us.
Well, it's local produce, right? So it's locally produced. It's produce that's produced within 30 miles.
So is there a commensurate
increase in production, or is just more that it was already produced staying here locally?
No, it's. I mean, there's more production of fruits and vegetables here locally than there was 15 years ago and 20 years ago. Okay. A lot more.
And that 400% increase in local, what does that do to the sort of purchase of food as a whole? Is that just a minor blip, or does it make a difference to the...
No, it's. I think somewhere in there, I put the number in the table. I think it's $19 or $20 million worth, I mean, that we're talking about in terms of local consumption now. It's not a trivial thing anymore.
Thank you.
I have Martha and then Will.
Thank you, Jim. 200 full and part-time staff. How many full and how many part-time?
We have about 90 FTEs or 95 FTEs, full-time equivalent. So, I think there's probably 60. 65 full-time staff.
Okay.
Yeah.
All in that building?
Yeah, that'll be our next request. No, no. No. We do a lot of telecommuting. No. No, one of the things that we do is we have a lot of staff who are working 4 hours. In fact, the number is actually closer to 300 and some people on payroll. But we have a lot of people who work as parents. So, for example, parenting educators, they're not contractors. They're employees of ours. And they might work 10 hours in a month. They might work 20 hours in a month. But they're there. So we have about almost 100 people who work half-time or more, who are all paid benefits, full benefits, all of whom, with the exception of, I think, a couple of county rural youth services workers we have under the county rural youth services contract, all the rest are paid a livable wage or higher. Yeah.
And on the regional network or shared business network, which counties are those?
So it's starting from the north, Oswego, Onondaga, Cayuga, Cortland, Tompkins, Tioga, Chemung, Broome. Okay. So basically the I-81 corridor and then Chemung.
And now that was a big brouhaha a couple of years ago. So we're not the biggest county in that.
We're the largest association.
Okay.
And with the most staff, with the biggest program, yeah.
Okay. Will, go ahead.
So. I'm on the board, and it's one of the more interesting things they do every month, sort of finding all the things every time. It's as is Dave, constantly learning about the amazing things that are happening. We did follow the saga of the Regional Business Network, which, as Ken describes, was supposed to be initially a great money saver, and they were going to give us money to implement. I must say I'm not happy to see the new cost. Am I not right, however, that you are also functioning as essentially the super director for this region in terms of overseeing that network? Do I remember that correctly?
And I prefer to call it. I'm the what they call the lead ED.
And what is that worth in terms of money to the association?
I get paid $10,000 for that effort. The opportunity cost for, so the reason that actually part of the reason that I decided to take it or to decide to take it was because I figured that it was one of the main ways we would have for actually making sure that we didn't get stuck with the biggest bill. The opportunity cost, So I've basically agreed to do this for 3 years, which I'm hoping will basically lock in a formula that'll be more or less permanent. Because the $10,000, the time it takes for this is time that could be used more productively, you know, in terms of program development, fundraising, grant writing, and so on. But for the moment, it's the right move in terms of where I put my time to make sure that the association doesn't end up spending a lot of money on something that we just don't need.
Go ahead.
So you know, one of my concerns, and I, kind of where I'm going, is that I think anybody knows Ken knows that he rivals Joe in terms of just an incredible amount of work, and you know, it's not unusual to be getting emails that were drafted in the middle of the night and whatever. And how many years you can keep this up? I am concerned that that you know that we're not seeing. I guess that my question, and we're supposed to put these in form of the question, is this, under this budget, can you keep this all up for this year, or do you need help, more help for your administrative duties? This is your chance, Ken.
Are you asking me as a board member? Are you asking me? No. It would be great. I pretty much work 80 hours a week, and I've been working like that for a number of years. Is it sustainable? Probably. I mean, this is the way I've worked pretty much since college. But do I, you know, would we do even more if we had some sort of support for some of the work that I'm doing? I think absolutely.
Okay, thank you. We'll talk more.
But you are getting $221,000 a year, right?
Yeah, I think it's actually lira.
Yeah, whether up or down a little bit. Joe's getting half of that. Go ahead, Leslie.
Thank you. Ken, I don't want to dwell on the regional shared network, whatever the thing is called. And I many of my questions were answered in your responses. I understand why we're doing this. Well, I just need to ask one other question. I'll call you later so I don't take up a lot of time. We are mandated to have this regional network. Can you explain that to me, please?
It's so County Law 224, which is the law that established, it just said that, you know, it's part of county law in the New York State. So what the county allowed to do and can do and so on and so forth. In that law, 224, Section 8, it says that every county can have an association if they choose. The conditions are that, one, they have to put some money on the table, and it has to be governed by a board of residents of that county, and it has to sign, there has to be a memorandum of agreement signed each year with Cornell. Cornell has administrative authority over these associations. In that role as administrative authority, the Cornell has said basically you have to be a member of the strategic or the shared business network, or you cannot be an association. We've had attorneys look at this. The county's attorney was looking at this. We have spent a lot of time in the last 3 years investigating every possible angle to not have to do this. I will say, so, you know, the way that I approach this is, I mean, part of the reason, the second reason that I decided to take this is because I also see some real opportunities to do some things differently. And we will do some things differently. And we will make this work. And we'll make it work really well. So it's not like at the end of this, we're not going to look back and say, oh, this was just a terrible thing, and it's still a terrible thing. What I expect we'll be able to do 3 or 4 years from now is look back at it and say, it was an awful thing. It was awfully conceived. It was awfully implemented. And despite that, we actually made it work really well. That's what I think is going to happen.
Let me end on that very positive note. Thank you very much, Ken. Human Service Coalition.
I take it you won't let me ask a follow-up.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's fine. Thanks. I'll talk to Ken later.
Ken, thank you for the colored chart and all the notes. I really appreciate it.
Sorry. Did anybody want one of these maps? I was going to take them away. So. I didn't pass them around because Guillermo said,
don't give them to people if they don't really aren't going to use them. So,
this is the green building. This is the green building's tour map.
Oh, yes, please. Then I don't have to go on the website.
Thank you very much.
fish slaughter night or something?
It looks it, doesn't it? One slaughter, two slaughter, three slaughter, we count them.
Could have done this at our house.
Done at your house, that's right.
Good evening.
Good evening.
First, let me thank you for having us here today to talk about our programs and the agencies we represent. This is a great opportunity. So I believe by your schedule, we're going to start with the Human Service Coalition and then move on to the agencies. Okay. You going to do that? Nancy does all the numbers for us. So.
Yeah, about 8 to 10 inches away. If you're on it too close, it's a very poppy sound.
Okay. Is this a good test?
Tell us if we're not right. Okay. Our first slide, which you've seen a bunch of times, is our budget slide and the recommended budget. I'm too close. For 2014, which is a $15,044. That includes two recommended over targets, one being the $5,044 for maintenance of effort, COLA, whatever we're calling it, and a $10,000 increase for information referral 211 services. We asked for, they had lost some funding this year, some local funding. They've lost both state and local funding at the same time that their number of calls keep increasing. So we're trying really hard to get more funding for that program. Okay. So these are the major influences that we're looking for. Our programs are 2014. You could also call them our goals. As you know, because I know they came here to talk to the legislature, we are one of the three agencies that have been trained to be navigators for the new health exchanges, and which started yesterday. So we need to gear up. And everybody asked for weeks, what do you think is going to happen on October 1st? We had absolutely no idea what was going to happen on October 1st. We've already talked to people. We are doing some presentations. But it was, are 10,000 people going to call or, you know, or not. So it's been a steady flow, and that's the way we want it to be steady. There's a six-month period for people to sign up, so we have lots of time to get people enrolled.
We're making appointments through 211, the call center. So that's handy.
One of our goals is to secure more contracts and funding to support the 211 call center. As you may or may not know, the call center presently does the scheduling for the VITA income tax program. So they schedule thousands of people during that income tax period, January to approximately the beginning of April. They also do the scheduling for the FISH program, which connects people in need of rides to medical transportation. We intend to continue to increase our work with agencies and boards, as we have done through this past year. We see this trend continuing in 2014. We talk about the increased reporting for state and federal contracts, and this is almost all our contracts. We are the lead agency for the continuum of care, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, and the increased reporting and just paperwork that they are requiring has jumped tremendously in the past couple of years. We're finding that's also true of the state contracts we have. We've had to literally hire someone to help just do the reporting and contracts. It's becoming so onerous. So that the people in the programs actually can do the program work and not spend all their time just putting in reports and reports and reports. We want to increase our use of technology. Going forward, Do we have two examples that of that are this past year, we on our website, we now have a, I don't know what we call it. It's a meeting space directory. It's a database which people can go to and use and search by, we have it set up now to search by township, municipality, and then you can do advanced searches by how big of the room you want, you know, whether it has these facilities. That was kind of in response to when we lost the space at the Women's Community Building, people were constantly saying, you know, we don't know where to go, we don't know where to find rooms. So we have over 200 rooms in the county in the database right now, and that keeps growing every day as people add space. The second one is we are looking at doing some of our training, some more popular training, especially things like board basics, and we are going to videotape them so that they're available for everyone to use. A lot of people told us, you know, the board members that have been able to go to things like board basics, you know, think it's really great, but there's a lot of people who can't get there during the times we're offered, so we're going to make those available and some other ones like videotapes. All right. Now I'm going to go to our, the first one you see is the one I already talked about. That's the 5,044 to help maintain agencies' operations. The second OTR that has been recommended is the $30,000 that we have been receiving for the past 7 years as one-time funding. You're kind enough to make that target funding, and that is the funding that supports the work we do around the workshops. This past year, again, we have trained about 700 people, 40-some workshops every year, and this past March, we began offering a new program. We will go in directly into agencies and work directly with the entire boards. We do one or two or three consultations as they need. If they need more, we'll help hook them up with somebody who can work with them more long term. And since March, we have met with 21 separate boards. So that's been a great added program. And the third one is the $10,000 for the 211 program that I talked about, along with losing local funding. The 211 is also purchasing, it's called an iCarol system. The system we use now is kind of a homegrown system, and because the 211s around the state are kind of coalescing around this one system, the iCarol, that we are purchasing that system too. Unfortunately, it's going to cost, like all software systems do, a yearly fee, but it will allow us to share our data with other regions, and do the same for them. When Hurricane Sandy hit, we took calls from that region, and at that time we didn't have compatible databases, but this will allow us to go in deep and answer calls, in which they will do for us too in case of emergency. The over target that was not recommended, we requested $5,000, and let me explain the purpose for this. As a lead agency for this continuum of care, this is a grant that brings in $2,000 to $3,000 a year to support services for homeless. Did I say $200,000 or $300,000 a year to support homeless services in our community. That's the one that is requiring a tremendous amount more paperwork, and there is no admin for the work we do for that. So in order to hire somebody, I kind of put together this idea, because homelessness is a countywide program, if we could get $5,000 from the city, $5,000 from the county, $5,000 from the city, and I just put IRA. They haven't committed that money, but as a suggestion of a place to go, and then $5,000 in local fund. And the HUD is allowing us to actually ask for a total of $5,000 in admin money going forward next year. I don't know what they thought that was going to buy us, but that is the amount they told us we were allowed to ask for. But by putting together all those funds, we could probably try to get a half-time person maybe to help run this program.
Questions. We'll start with Pam, then Martha. Go ahead, Pam.
Excuse me.
Yeah, Kathy, thanks for all the information. I have a question about the 211. I'm sorry to hear that they have short in their funding. But a couple of years ago, I remember that there was a program, and I'm forgetting the name of the specific program, but it was with the Way to Go. It was it was having people call to find out information on all different kinds of transportation. And my understanding was that you or the 211 Center put in an application so that would come to the 211 Center, which made a lot of sense to me at the time. And you did not get that funding, right? Or did you actually apply?
So the way that funding went is that funding comes through Department of Social Services. And they needed to contract with one entity.
Right.
And so the part that we, because there was a lot of education components to it and working with businesses and going out. So 211, the contract went to Cooperative Extension. And we subcontract with 211 to provide some services. Right now
you subcontract with Way to Go to provide
right.
some services.
And that contract right now is for $7,000 a year. So it's... it's some funds, but it's not going to be enough to keep the program. So,
right, okay. And the funding, the diminishing support from, or maybe just your costs have gone up. What is?
Well, we lost $10,000 in United Way funding this year.
Oh, you did.
We did, and costs always go up, but. We specifically lost $10,000 in United Way.
Okay, so this is a complete. I'm sorry. I just had a couple of follow-ups.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
So this is a completely locally funded center.
We get about $10,000, a little less, in state funding for this program. The state had originally funded this at a much higher level, and we were getting between $80,000 and $90,000, and then about 3 years ago, money went away. There's still a little, it's like $500,000 for the entire state, which includes all of Long Island. And so by the time it filters down to Tompkins County, we get about $10,000 from state funding. And the rest is contracts. We do have a contract with Cortland County because we provide 211 services to Cortland County. And a few smaller, with the VITA program and with Way to Go, but they're pretty small fish.
Martha, Will, Frank, Carol, all at once. Mike?
You said for 211, I want to remember that you said you lost state and local funding.
State funding. About 3 years
right.
ago, and the local funding, the $10,000 United Way funding, we lost.
That was for 211.
It started in July, so the United Way year is July to June. So.
Okay, the trainings are terrific, and it sounds like the mentorship where you go into the agencies. That's really great. How many? I'm looking here. I don't see where you have an FT. How many FTEs work for the coalition?
We have about, I just did that as you were saying. We have about 13 FTEs, and we have 17 employees, about 13 FTEs.
Okay.
Maybe slightly under 13.
And so that's a lot of growth, even though our part of it isn't big. That's from various grants that you've been able to get?
We have a budget of about $1.1 million. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is the Health Planning Council, and they have a number of grants. They are they have the Creating Healthy Places grant. They do diabetes training. We were just asked to apply for additional funding to expand our diabetes education program. Mm-hmm. And then we are a rural health network also, so we do that.
Okay, and just one more. The meeting room, meeting space database, is that just for people to see what's available, or can they sign up online too?
They can't sign up, but there is a contact person for them to call. We found that where people were very generous about putting their name, they kind of wanted to keep control of the process for their own rooms. It's not saying that in the future, if everything works out well, we couldn't go to a system where people could sign up online. Ken will help me do any of that.
Okay. And I think that Kathy Covert is working on a plan for how to use that space over there to be available for meetings as well.
That's great. And it's set up so, and I should say, the person who helps physically develop, we did all the contacts, the website was from Cooperative Extension, so this was a joint project between the two of us. You can actually go on yourself and put all your information about your room on, and so that's how it's easy for people to add space, or you can take your space off if you want to. So, yeah, and did I say anywhere in here? I gave you a handout, some of the highlights. I didn't put them all up on slides, but some HSC highlights, and I did want to highlight that the information referral line is now answering 12,000 calls a year.
Is that it?
That is okay. It. I kept it on one side of a page.
That's for the county city funding request also. There are two documents. I have Will, Frank Carroll, Mike Pat.
So I want to talk about the non-recommended OTR for the continuum of care. That was about 5,000, and I guess I'll start with Joe. What was your thinking in terms of not supporting that? And then, Kathy, what is your thinking in terms of what you'll do if you don't get it?
Well, I don't think there's any hard science here. I mean, we did provide a pretty significant increase to the coalition this year. The largest increase was to take that one-time money and turn it into target, which lifted levy. So we felt we made a pretty strong commitment. We backfilled the loss of the United Way money for the 211 Center and felt that given that level of assistance, maybe they could find another source of support for the match on that grant.
Thank you. Yes? Can you? or will you?
Keep looking for it. I mean, it looed. We just do it myself, and I missed some deadlines, and, you know, okay. We do the best we can.
Thank you.
Kickstarter, maybe. I have Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Kathy, stay on that one.
After Frank, Carol, relax.
Stay on that one for just a second, and I have a second one. In the write-up, it indicates that the request is only part of a grouping that you apply for funding from HUD, from the city, excuse me, at a local foundation. Are you in danger of losing the potential of other monies because you're not going to get the 5,000 wasn't recommended?
It's always attractive to put together funding coalitions, and it's to other entities. You know, it's been my experience if somebody sees that somebody else is in, that they might very well say, well, you know, I can do $5,000. So in that sense, but I haven't talked to other entities about this yet. You were my first.
Okay.
I mean, HUD tells you what you can apply for. So that one's, if I meet the threshold, I get the money. And if they don't change their threshold, which they do a lot. But they, you know, the I mean, another local funder, a private sector, and, you know, somewhere from the city to get it, you know.
The other question, I want to go back to a question Pam started to ask about Way to Go and 211. You heard, we didn't get into a lot of detail with Ken's, but Ken, on the individual pieces. But in the Cooperative Extension array of accounts, the Way to Go program for 2013 had revenues of $164,000 and they project revenues for 2014 of $200,000. But the expenses are $173,000 for 2013 and $210,000 for 2014. And the additional 10,000 for 2014 was recommended by the county, by the county administrator. Their FTEs are staying the same, but they have a whole myriad of volunteer workers. Because 211 has absorbed some of the responsibility, does Way to Go make any sort of a contribution to the 211 program? That you know, and Ken is still here, so.
We contract with the Way to Go program for about, it's 7,000 and change, 7,000 to 8,000 per year.
Seven or 70?
Seven.
Seven.
Yeah. to do, yeah.
Well, some of this money that goes to Way to Go, they're able to apply under one of Dwight Mengel's transportation grants, and there's an array of services that the Independence Center and whatnot. Are you permitted to apply under those because of the nature of what 211? I know you don't provide direct transportation services, but you certainly provide administrative backup. Can any of those grants accommodate administrative money to help you plug the gap? I know Joe plugged the United Way gap, but I'm thinking ahead a little bit. Is there some way that you might want to, for the future, think of another option here?
I mean, we do apply for funding for the FISH program because we take their calls. That's another fairly identical grant.
Another one of the entities, right?
And we have applied, and I think that grant was due last week. And so we did apply for an increase to do some additional scheduling for FISH. We can apply for specific programs. I know they've been working on some other transportation. We're part of discussions about some other transportation, like inter-county things, but I mean, we do and we can when there's a specific program, but and that's part of our pitch is that we have a call center where people are sitting there all day that people can call when they need to access rides, and we do scheduling, we know how to set up those databases, and those are the kind of contracts we're trying to get going forward.
Especially with the maintenance of effort increases that you have in this proposed budget for 211. So I would urge you to, I sit in on some of those meetings. I know Pam has on behalf of TCAT when they have those grants, and they just rearranged the columns, if you will, on the JARC funding and whatnot. Joe's been pretty helpful on getting this thing straightened out a little bit. But going forward, of course, who the heck can predict after yesterday, who can predict what the feds are going to do? Maybe nothing. I'd stay tuned on something like that for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, we read the, you know, what they put out that we could possibly apply for through that grant, and we go for it.
Some of us would love to see you apply for some of that money.
Right. It's not that we don't apply. It's the way the RFP is put out, because we're a call center. We don't go out and do the education pieces that Cooperative Extension does. So we can't apply. We can't do what the whole RFP requires.
Right.
So it has to go. If they split it up, we'd be happy to, you know, apply for the one section or whatever we could apply for.
Like a subcontractor. Sure. Anyway, just food for thought.
Carol.
So thanks. Will asked one of my questions about the particular OTR for this year. Am I missing something in the budget? Does it show us anywhere here what your total budget is and where our funding fits within it?
No, have not usually given you that, but we certainly
so,
could.
You know, I was in fundraising for 23 years and or more. One of the things that it just might be helpful to us to understand something more about where our funding fits within the continuum of your other funding,
streams, how that's changed over time. Maybe it would help us get to understanding how to meet or not meet the over-target requests. I did look a little bit on your website, and I want to recognize the city of Ithaca, the town of Ithaca, and the town of Groton, I see, are among your funders, which is great. But so it's hard for us to understand. So is there anything more that you can tell us about that here now, or that you'd be willing to share with us, or that we could find somewhere online if for those of us individually interested?
Sure. County funding is about a third of our funding, a little less than a third of the coalition's funding. It is a large part of the funding that goes to human service planning, which is basically myself and Nancy, and which is the administration, the planning administration part of the coalition. So that's right around $200,000 for that program. And then there's $100,000 that goes to 211, and a little less than that, around $90,000 that goes, I probably don't have the exact numbers, that goes to the Human Health Planning Council. So it is a smaller part of the Health Planning Council, but oddly enough, since you brought up, I was talking to Betty Falco today, who said, and we were talking about her grants, her state grants that come in, they're so tight and specific, and she was saying, I couldn't do this without the core funding I get from the county that lets me be a little flexible with some of the, you know, when it doesn't pick up the fringe, you know, we can still run the programs because we can use some county funding to pay for some of the fringe for these programs. And so it has allowed that program to really pull in a lot of other money into the county. It's about half of the funding for 211, and probably more than that, maybe 60% of the funding for the human service planning.
Let me interrupt here. Kathy, you're saying numbers that you're recalling as we're going along. And,
I have a great memory.
Yeah, and what I would like it to maybe answer this question, first I want to get Joe involved here a little bit. And, you know, I think what you've given us is very clear. But go ahead, Joe.
Just in my role as the master of the obvious, it's not just the Human Services Coalition who we budget this way. All the agencies that we sponsor, all the way from TC3 to TCAD to the library, all of those, we present in the budget what we fund without that broader context of what their entire budget is and how we fit within it. So, again, I didn't want anybody to think that they are unique in the way their budget is presented or included in this budget. In fact, it's the way we do the agencies.
Yeah, no, can I do a follow-up, please? I understand that we don't require it. For some of these organizations, I can go online or I get their annual reports, and I understand where our funding fits in the context of their other funding, and in some cases, it makes me more sympathetic to their need with us. And also, I know a little bit more about how they, you know, their funding streams change over time. So I was just asking if there's anything they want to share with us. They obviously don't have to, but if they wanted to share, that might make us help us understand the challenges as you go forward and ask other places, you know, how that availability changes from year to year. Might impact our thinking, but it's not a requirement. It just might help me.
I'd be happy to share whatever with you, especially if it makes you sympathetic.
I think we asked you for that.
I have Mike. Next.
On your 211 over target, any insight on why the United Way dropped you $10,000?
They have review committees, and my understanding is the United Way is just moving in a different direction. They're moving into a direction of more direct services. We consider this like the basic direct service, being able to connect, but we weren't given a lot of explanation. It's just the way that group who reviewed the proposal went this year.
And was that the whole allocation or part of an allocation?
it was part, the they funded, if I can remember this correctly, I believe they funded 211 this year for $14,000, and they cut them to four. I believe that's how it went. Exact number.
I have Pat.
My question was answered. Thank you.
Leslie.
All right, so at least two of mine have been, and just as a quick reminder, Kathy, Carol asked a question I had, and then Mike asked the other one, is I thought some point last year or the year before we sort of asked for, you know, what's the county, you know, what do we put it in, where do we fit with that, so it would be great to have that information. Sure. My other question has to do with training, my favorite topic, and it's just a basic question. Great trainings, by the way. How do these trainings come about? Do you get proposals from folks? Is there a request that you put out that asks for people to put in proposals for trainings?
That's a good question. We do probably both. At the end of each training, we ask people to fill out a short questionnaire, but in the bottom of that questionnaire, it says any suggestions for trainings. There are some, excuse me, that we do on a regular basis, because they're always popular. And then we also have a group of consultants who do the trainings. We let them propose new trainings also, things that they would be interested in training. And we always have new people approaching us with suggestions and ideas. We sit down with them. We talk about it. Sometimes we'll try one out to see if it works. So we have from a couple different directions. Scott Heyman, who works, you know, with all the consultants. You know, I mean, he'll come. I mean, sometimes I just read something and say, "Wow, this would be a great thing to do." Or I'll read something that's going on in some other county and I'll shove it off to Scott and say, "Can you find somebody who can do this? Because I think this would be great." So it's really kind of a combination of ways to do that. But any, you know, we sit down and talk to anybody who has an idea of something they would like to do.
I appreciate hearing that you sit down and talk with anybody, but I'm also interested in knowing sort of how does, you know, what kind of mechanism does Scott use to sort of recruit people when you say, find somebody to do this really great training here. What kind of mechanism is used so that we are getting a good, diverse group of people providing training? I see some of the same names over and over again, and I just wonder, I know they do great training because I've been out to some of their trainings, but I'm wondering how can we expand that? That Joe Public, who may have a great training that he or she wants to offer, don't necessarily know that they come and say, "Hey, I want to do this."
We added a lot of new people this year, new trainers have come to us in one form or the other.
New topics.
I don't think we've actually like put something on a listserv saying, you know, we do like people who've had some kind of experience training to understand adult education a bit, that it's a little different, who can at least say that they've, you know, done this before somewhere. We will work with people we do a lot of work with people to develop something. Ideas they have. We don't, it's kind of an elusive thing, what makes a good trainer and what doesn't, you know, or even a good topic. There are some topics I thought would never fly that were very popular. So
my interest is more in how the common person who, you know, may not be someone who's trained in this community before, know that they can contact you about, you know, or the agency about doing a training, or how do they get recruited by Scott when he goes out?
Right. I think most of it now we've been doing it so long it's just word of mouth. But you're right. I'm sure there are people who could do this who have not heard about this. So all our trainings are on the listserv. So if anybody has an idea, and we've gotten some that way, seen it published on the listserv, have called us and say, you know, there's something I think might be of interest to people.
Thank you.
Frank.
Kathy, the Health Planning Council, I noticed that what they're asking for 2014 is the same as 2013. They had the one small OTR in there for $987. for program expense. Are they acting as the navigator in the health exchanges?
They are. We are one of three agencies that are doing that.
But I didn't know if Betty actually performing the navigator's task?
Betty is trained. There are three of our staff that are trained right now, and another one will be going through training in a week or so. So we'll have four trained navigators.
They are also involved in helping us put together the new health plan up at the health department, because some of us have been involved in that too. And we've had two or three meetings up there. I'm a little concerned that maybe they didn't ask for enough money for next year. I mean, it's a funny thing to...
The amount you talked about is the 1.5% of their funding, so that was included. And considering that the other two programs needed to ask for funding, you know, and Betty has gotten a number of grants this year. We didn't ask for anything specific for Health Planning Council.
As Martha often says, let's talk.
Sure.
And I would agree with that, over the phone. Go ahead, Martha.
I just want to know if we should, on our United Way designations, say, please put this towards 211. That's all. A comment? Or should we? That's the question.
I think that's up to you individually.
That's
Peter?
Does the federal government pay the navigators or reimburse us for those who act as navigators?
So the state has contracts with people throughout New York State. And then there are, in our region, there are a couple larger organizations that are contracting with the state. And then they're subcontracting to the counties. So we are a subcontractor of an organization out of New York City to provide this service here in Tompkins County.
And that means that they pay us for our time. Is that correct?
We have a full-time navigator. They don't pay us for a full-time navigator, but we were able to use some other funding from other grants we had to make this a full-time position.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. We're moving on to Human Service Coalition Community Agencies. People, we have this group, Solid Waste, and TCAD to round out the evening. TCAD and Solid Waste have no OTRs.
Okay, now moving on to the agencies. And in that packet was a spreadsheet, thank you, that's what I'm looking for, which describes what the agencies got last year and what they requested this year. So as you know, we use a citizens review committee to look over the applications from the agency. We had a couple of new members this year. You can see Gladys Brangman. I don't know if anybody, Gladys used to work for the County Office for the Aging, moved away for a few years and has moved back and agreed to be on the committee. Mary Pat Dolan, who I think everybody knows Mary Pat. Renee Farkas from Cornell. Sue Cattell, who works for Ithaca Urban Renewal Agency. Lena Lucas from the County Office for the Aging. And Ron Provost and Phil Schneider, are members of the HSC board who have been members of this committee for a while. So it was a great group. They asked very good questions. They really understand the agencies and the community and the issues around them. So I want to publicly thank them for the time that they all put in, because it takes a lot of time to do this. So this slide, kind of self-explanatory. We asked for, I'm looking at myself, I have to look back. The $15,000 change from the previous year for the 1.5% OTR in that slide. You want to keep going? Oh, this, I apologize, but we just thought you'd be looking at these. You have to zoom these in.
Right.
We wanted to show you. Yeah, we tried to get a little tricky here because we thought you'd been staring at slides for a long time. So we want to show you the different areas that all the agencies you fund impact in this community. So you, the money impacts housing and homeless services, victim services, health, immigrant services, legal services, food security, safety net services, employment, child care, mediation, income security through the FIDA program, literacy, seniors, cultural diversity, and offender aid. So those are the kind of the areas that the money spent by the county has a really deep impact in those areas, which covers a lot. So instead of just listing the agencies, we kind of listed the areas they work in. Okay, thank you. This is just, it's really hard to kind of sum up what's going on in 17 different agencies. So we kind of looked at some of the major trends we've kind of seen. Agencies are still dealing with the loss in funding that they felt over the past 5 years. It's really had a major impact on a number of agencies, and they are barely getting back to maybe where they were. Some will never get back to where they were 5 years ago. The multi-county services, I don't know exactly what to call this, but we're noticing there's a number of agencies, Red Cross, Catholic Charities, Neighborhood Legal Services, CDRC, that are now regional, so some of the decisions about the direction they're going in, their budgets, you know, who's doing what, are not being made locally. They're being made on a regional level that really has an impact on their services. Red Cross, which we'll talk about later, as people know, has decided to end their long-term homeless services in this community. And, again, those are decisions that are made on a regional level. They've been great to work with as they transition out of that program. But where decisions used to be made locally all the time, they are not necessarily anymore. The need for more safety net services, we've heard it both from Catholic Charities, who've seen an increase in people coming to the Samaritan Center, certainly food pantries, and people are very concerned over the cut in food stamps that is looming. So, and of course, we talk all the time about the lack of affordable housing. It seems like there's a ton of building going on, but that problem never seems to really ever go away, and I don't imagine it ever is and it's going to go away in this community. And getting services out to the rural communities and getting people who need services into the center of the community is always, it kind of goes hand in hand with the affordable housing and some of the other issues up there. Okay. We did, we, I believe, handed out a chart that looked at funding over the agencies over the past 5 years. We did, but we just did a graph for you. The red one up there is all the agencies. The blue line is OAR, and I know Deb's here. So we just kind of wanted to show you that, you know, agencies are barely where they were in 2009 and to some extent not even where they were in 2009. So just kind of give you a visual representation of that. Okay. So now we'll talk about our over-target requests that are supported through the budget. The first one is the $11,568, which is to help maintain the agency operations. That's kind of the 1.5 across the board. And then the $29,75 is for OAR. The $10,000, the third one, that is for the AmeriCorps paralegal positions that are with Neighborhood Legal Services. Again, that is funding that they have been getting for 9 years or so as one-time funding. They depend very heavily on these AmeriCorps paralegals, and they're a big part of their organization. And Joe has recommended that be target funding this year. And the last little one there is a $25,000 in one-time discretionary fund that I'm going to pass the ball to Joe to explain about that.
Okay. It's on that new page that Kevin handed out.
It is. It's on the beige page. I think to understand this, you can look at the beige page and maybe the earlier
gray,
OTRs
Joe.
To see.
Find our gray page here, Joe.
Is it gray?
Gray.
I'm sorry. It looks beige to me.
I don't know.
It's these lights.
How many think it's beige?
Beige. You know, that's beige. I don't know. It's beige.
Must be
gray.
You were here till 11:30 last night.
Believe me, I know gray. So
the lights up for you, Joe.
Anyway, there were a number of OTRs that were requested. Many of them were one time for specific kinds of initiatives or need. And in looking at all those individual requests, and really under the mantra, which was ours this year, of we are in a maintenance mode. We're not in an expansion mode. So in looking at those and going back and forth on some of those and talking to Kathy about, you know, how do we handle things that arise over the course of the year that may be ad hoc, that may arise mid-year even, that really rise to the level of funding without having to go through this agency-by-agency one-time or the OTR situation through the budget. And what we came up with was a fairly new approach, which is to say, why don't we allocate $25,000 and let the Human Services Coalition, through its review structure, determine the best ways that those one-time dollars should be allocated. Again, acknowledging that things arise over the course of the year that may be unforeseen, can't predict it in the budget, and recognize that there needs to be resources that should be available for that. How do we best address that? And the answer that we put into the budget and the recommendation that's in here is that we create this new $25,000 OTR using one-time money to address those kinds of needs. So that is that last OTR in the mix that we have recommended as a part of the tentative budget.
Does that mean something comes up?
Peter, if you're going to talk, please use a microphone, but I haven't called on you, by the way. So are we done?
No.
Okay, go ahead. Continue on.
Okay, so one of the reasons that we suggested this to Joe, and I don't know what's on the next slide, I can't remember anymore, there were a couple almost special circumstances this year. I talked a little bit about the transition that Red Cross is going through for homeless services. So we have a building down there that needed some repairs. But we're not exactly sure until it transitioned to whomever is going to run that program, how much those repairs are going to cost. And where we put a placeholder for the Friendship Center so we can find out where that's going to reside, I said, so there was that funding. There was some funding we requested for Catholic Charities, because they're anticipating an increase in requests for the Samaritan Center, and we needed to work with them to kind of get their systems up and their numbers up to figure out how we were going to track those that increase. There was right, thank you. And we had put some money in the budget to help Southside during some transition. When we met with Southside, it was with one director who had some great plans for programming, and so the review committee really wanted to support that programming, wanted to support Southside's intentions of doing some long-term planning and programming that would be could be used wider throughout the county. And that director has since moved on, and a new director, who happens to be here tonight, I did want to, this is Kenneth McLaren, who is the new interim director for Southside. I wanted him to have him come say hello. And so we wanted some funds that we could help work with them throughout the year to do this kind of long-term planning. Because of a bunch of things that weren't as solid as maybe we would have liked them, we kind of came up with an idea that this might be funds that we could use to help these agencies, which we've identified going forward through the year. I don't know if that was a better, Joe does this better than I do. We do have a few more slides, but yeah. If...
Please go through your slides.
And then we'll...
And then I have your names down. We'll get back to the process. It works better that way.
Right. So these are the over target, and that was one type thing. These are target requests that were not supported by the budget. One of the first one was for Neighborhood Legal Services. Neighborhood Legal Services last year got $20,000 in one-time funding to make up for some anticipated loss in funding. Actually lost an attorney who left seeing the kind of handwriting on the wall coming down with funding. So we did, and you gave them $20,000 in one-time funding. They were able to hire an attorney earlier this year to replace that that person. So what the review committee, they asked for the $20,000 to be made target this year. The review committee recommended half of that funding be made target this year, $10,000. It's here, $6,206, because of our ability to add a little from the maintenance of effort funding and other little funding. So the amount that was short from the $10,000 the review committee recommended was the $6,206 in funding. These numbers are odder this year than anything. And similar for Southside. Southside requested $10,000 in target funding, which the review committee felt was a request they wanted to support. Again, because of shifting of some other funding, the amount that was short from that $10,000 was $3,239. And so neither of those were recommended, but neither of those were recommended by the county administrator, but they were recommended by the review committee for funding. Mm-hmm. And the one-time funding that was not recommended but kind of rolled into the other funding was the review committee recommended $15,000 for Southside to help them really solidify their programs, help a little bit with their staffing, bring up staff salaries, and to work to increase their volunteer.
And you have two more.
There they are, man. These just keep going. Additional one time with the two I talked about, the $7,500. They recommend $7,500 to the Samaritan Center for increased for 2014, and $5,000 they recommended is a one-time funding to the food pantries and loaves and fishes because they always need it, and they're really anticipating that they're going to see a lot more of their loaves and fishes have seen. They said people just seem to be coming in hungrier than they were. So a lot more people having seconds that they just come hungry. So they recommended $5,000 one-time funding, which goes to the food bank of the Southern Tier. All the food pantries have a line of with them, so they order food through the line of credit. They order food through the food bank of the Southern Tier.
Okay. Now, I had a bunch of people waving their hands. Brian, I actually called, I got his name earlier. So far I have Brian, Peter, Leslie, and Frank, and now Pat, now Martha, and now Carol. Brian, you're up.
Thanks. Before I ask my question, this budget presentation schedule sheet, which I love, for some reason, I don't know, maybe there's no mission or something, but I don't see Ray Slaughter's name on here. Ray, we might have to skip you for tonight.
I'm going to put him in at the end.
But you'll come talk.
He has no OTR.
He's got a
Slaughter's not enforced.
I sat here even during the first part of the presentation looking over OTR 37 and the increase in the reserve fund. And, Joe, I'm glad you gave that explanation. As I was looking at that, the thing that struck my eye was that it was over the requested amount. And although it's some $25,000 less than the total requested amount, it seems to me that that is an attempt to get a fund of money and to basically let Kathy or whoever identify the unfunded OTRs or anything else that they choose to fund. And quite frankly, they know best. And the reason why I say that is I can recall in past budgets where we sit there and try to divvy up this money depending on one's favorite program or something, anything. And although we don't have to be married to what amounts to $25,000 less money recommended than is requested, we can certainly do something to that. My hope is that we don't mire ourselves into the same sorts of things that we have done in the past, and that is to try to divvy up this money for them and to simply let them do it because they obviously know best. That's my view. I'm glad that you did something like this.
That's great. And if I can just pick up on that, in terms of the spirit and the intent of this, you're exactly right. You've explained it very well. In terms of the mechanics of how you see the OTR, the $15,000 you see that was the original request and it went to $25,000, I don't want to say misleading because that has connotations to it, but that was originally a placeholder for the Red Cross money that Kathy had talked about. So that's where that $15,000 came from. By the time we finished that process, again, everything had been kind of rolled up into this one $25,000 item. And again, you've explained the intent very well over the last couple of minutes.
And that wasn't a question.
I recognize that right away as not a question. Okay. Peter.
Now, my question was answered.
Leslie.
So I'm on the same OTR. So what's originally in our book that was recommended, $25,000 for American Red Cross set aside, no longer exists.
No. That's correct.
It's now been replaced by this reserve,
right,
which would include, as Kathy and Nancy were explaining, this set aside for the Red Cross.
Red Cross, yes. And the other...
And some of the other ones, yes.
Right, I heard the other ones, but it would include this one,
yes,
that was in here.
Right.
And is that, well, you don't know what the amount is, you
That's
said.
That's right.
I don't yet.
That's fine. Thank you.
Is that it?
For now.
Frank.
Kathy, you had a slide up there that you kept. Joe loves the PowerPoints, by the way. But you had a slide up there that you kept popping different items into about all the different outreach programs and whatnot.
The impact area slide, is that what you're talking about?
That's the one.
That one.
Impact area slides. And I heard you say rural, bringing services to rural areas.
Right, that was right,
that was this
that
one.
Was
The monies that we were just talking about, and I disagree with Brian. I think we'll pass on a $10 million item like we did last night. It took us 3 hours, but we'll spend 4 days talking about $1.26. We would love to help you divvy up the $25,000. No, I'm only kidding. Believe me, some of us sat in on those review sessions on Sundays. Is there any of that money that you have plans? Well, it's probably too soon to know. But in order to get anybody that's living outside the city and perhaps outside the town of Ithaca, because they still have pretty good service there, is there any outreach to bring the people in from the rural areas? Because the services tend to be in the city for the most part, using Gadabout or TCAT or whatever, maybe buying bus passes for them or some plan such as that.
I mean, there are some agencies that, well, I know Women's Opportunity Center used to have a car that they would send out and bring people back in. I think they lost that when they lost their funding. I don't think they do that anymore. What we had in here were things that people had requested. And the discussion I had with Joe was, you know, going forward in what people had requested. In other words, if we didn't need the $25,000, we wouldn't use the $25,000. But this is what, you know, people had proposed. No one has requested that, but that's not a bad idea. But that's always a concern, how people get to the services.
Well, we've heard from half the world on transportation and the problems of people. Amy keeps coming to the committee. You've sat in on some of the health committee meetings where she's presented some of the material about transportation for youth and whatnot. Same thing exists for seniors. Same thing exists for people who have an illness or whatever. And they try to use Gadabout where they can. And that's adequate, I guess. But my suspicion is the minute the word gets out that you're sitting on $25,000, you're going to have $100,000 worth of requests. You know that as well as I do.
Right. We weren't actually put out, like, requests for funding, but...
It's too late.
Right. Would you keep it in mind, Kath?
Pardon me?
Assuming this passes, we still have a few more meetings to go through. Assuming this $25,000 survives in that manner, can you give some thought to something that, like I was describing, such as what I was describing?
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
Pat.
My question. Actually, I think I have two questions, if I may. Picks up a bit on the theme that I think Frank was mentioning. One of the questions that I could ask when I talk about the county budget in Lansing, I usually do a presentation about the budget, has to do with to what degree do the programs that the county supports benefit the folks who live in rural areas, and how accessible are they to folks in rural areas? And the question behind the question is very closely tied to the use of tax dollars. We live out here. We pay county taxes the same as everybody else. But do we get the same kind of benefit from those county taxes as do folks who live in a more central urban part of the county? So what I would like to know is either through a central location such as the Human Service Coalition, or by individual agencies, is there information available, and if so, where would I find it, that describes the distribution of clientele, for example, of these agencies, the total number of people that are served by them, and that would help to address that question of to what degree is there some sort of equity for all of our residents of Tompkins County.
Right. We, in our applications, we ask that of all our agencies. They have to break down by municipality where their clients are served. So we have all that information.
Is that something that could be provided to me?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you.
How about to all of us?
Yep. Okay. Yep, we can do that.
No, go ahead.
So, do you want aggregate numbers or do you want for each agency? We can.
I would prefer to have by each agency if it can be done that way.
That's how we collect them, but we can put them together for you in any way you want.
In fact, if you could do it by agency and then give like a total.
We do. We
do. Okay. Then my second question is something I'm just not familiar with here, and I don't quite understand what it means. On this colored sheet, whatever color we're calling it, it says the purpose of the alternatives impact is to promote economic advancement for low-income households, blah, blah. How does it do that? How do you promote, or how does this agency promote economic advancement?
I'm sorry. I'm not quite sure where you're reading from.
I'm on.
I'm going to go with gray, but
it's the VITA program.
Oh, the VITA program?
VITA.
The VITA program is the income tax. That's the program that it's through Alternatives Federal Credit Union. The VITA program helps people fill out their income tax and get income tax refunds.
Okay.
And millions every year. But,
okay. Thank you.
Martha.
Thank you. I've got a couple things. We've got a lot of different numbers that don't add up.
Yeah.
Is this the sales tax issue?
No. It's different ways of looking. I realize some of it, too. Sometimes numbers are just target. Sometimes they're target plus one time. Sometimes they're projected something. But give us, you can ask, and we'll try to tell you.
Okay. All right. Well, so this table, is this all county money, or is sales tax in here, or
what table are you referring to?
It's an unnumbered table. It was on in the book.
It was provided. Like, it was provided after our first meeting. It was asked for at the first meeting. So it's
one side has 2009 to 2014 allocation summary for the agencies, and the other side is the same for the coalition's programs.
It's in our big books, just before the section 5, page 23.
That is the agency. That is the city and county.
This is city and county. Okay. Okay. It'd really be great if you put that in here. So, all right. This one says county city funding requests.
So this one, the first one, is a history of funding for the agencies over. Welcome 2009 forward.
Okay.
The one we handed out today, because we usually give you something that talks about what people got last year in both target and one time, and what they requested, and what was recommended this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's at the top it says county city funding requests.
Well, because we put city and county in the title because it's the funds are generated from city sales tax and county property tax.
Right, they're both. They're both the county city funding. They're both the total.
It's the total, but right. And this comes out of our. These numbers come out of our budget. This is not.
Right.
So the sales tax, because sales tax comes in as revenue, so it all goes. Okay,
right.
Got it. All right. I don't know if I missed something, but the child development. Didn't the Child Development Council used to get?
Not through us.
Not through. Okay.
Well, maybe a long time ago. Not.
I don't think so.
Nancy's been
okay.
Here.
The emergency food and shelter program, they're getting some. We manage that, too. Maybe that's what you're thinking
of. Okay. The drop-in children's center, we've had a lot of conversations about livable wage, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested to know page 43, section 5, talks about their this is their basic funding, right? It looks like their staffing is going to go down by 1.5. Is that right? Page 43 in section 5. So the question is, then if I'm looking at this, I don't see an OTR for them. There's
getting a slight increase, but there's not an OTR request.
Okay, so they, according to this, are getting a slight increase that doesn't show up
right
on this page.
Because some of the increases aren't actually OTRs.
It fits within what you guys
right
are able to. Okay. Right. So do we have any idea what it would cost to increase their staff who are not making a livable wage, what that would cost?
We do. It's estimated it's somewhere around.
Yeah,
Satan, I'm sorry. Okay. It's estimated somewhere around $70,000 to $80,000
a year.
Okay. And they, I just happened to run into their direct, the chair of their board today while I was ordering lunch, and she's very excited. She said,
"Kathy, can you speak up a little?"
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. She said, "They're new. As you know, they changed their name." From the Drop-In Children's Center to the
Downtown Ithaca Children's Center.
She said it's really helped. Their enrollment has increased. And
they're changing
some of
the
changes.
Name?
Yeah.
She said, well, they have a new website. They've done some marketing. They changed their name. I mean, she said she feels that it's really.
Because
really
the old name, if they've outgrown that by calling it a drop-in center, they still do some of the drop-in with appointments, but. They kept the DICC, so if people use the letters, now it's the Downtown Ithaca Children's Center.
Okay, I guess at some point I hope we'll have more of a conversation, maybe through HHS, about their program and the role of our funding and who they serve, et cetera. Thank you.
I have Levlin and Pam.
Thank you. So Martha beat me to the punch in trying to understand the numbers because I am swimming here. But I have a question about the OTRs. The very first one that was funded, the 11-something to help the agencies. Oh, I've lost my page. Lord have mercy. Does that, I'm taking it that does not include the, I'm just, for example, priority for the Southside Community Center, is that who that is? 3,002, 3,900, the one that was recommended by the review committee, but not funded, that is separate from what this 11,568 that's recommended.
That 1.5 wasn't distributed, I think Kathy said, across the board. I think she meant with the pool of agencies, but it wasn't proportionate across all the organizations. So we didn't list how that was split, but there's some things that were in there. So
let me ask my question a different way. So I understand their part. What this additional 3,239 that was not funded, okay, that is a separate amount that was being asked for, that was being requested?
Right. They asked for 10,000. So last year they got 5,538 is their target, and they asked for a $10,000 target this year. And adding a little bit of the 1.5 in and some other little funds, that the part that we didn't have the fund to bring them up to the 10,000 was the 3,000. I think this is the same number you've been saying. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the 3,239 was just the part of the 10,000. The review committee recommended 10,000. We were able to put a little more in by using the 1.5, but we didn't have that $3,000. So that's what they're requesting in order to make Southside's target 10,000.
Right. So there is still some amount of money, and I'm just picking on Southside right now, but there's still some amount of money in this 11,568, if I read the agencies up there correctly.
Yep.
That they get some of that. Is that correct?
And you, the distribution you'll figure out.
And the reason some of these numbers, I have to say, why these numbers are so funny, our review committee members felt very strongly they kept wanting to end up with round numbers, and I kept saying you can't. But along the way, by ending, there is a nice round 10,000 there. They wanted to get 10,000 in the target for Southside.
We did have one committee.
But it was pieces of three things, and none of those were round.
All right, I guess
that's why
I think I'm following this now. Thank you. That was my question.
Okay, Carol, I skipped you, and then we're going over here.
Thank you. On the agency listing pages, there are some revenues listed. And I'm just looking for a definition. It doesn't look like the total budgets for those agencies. So what made the cut? What's a revenue that made it into our book versus one that didn't for the agencies?
I think that's a Kevin. Are you talking about the program summaries documents within the budget book itself?
In the budget book itself, yes.
So those are supposedly the agencies' total expenditures at top line, the revenues of the second line, and the net local is how much the county contributes towards that organization.
Total revenues for the entire agency? So Catholic Charities has they're showing a $328,000 budget.
That is what they sent me.
That could, you know, is that your understanding?
It's only for the Samaritan Center, though. It's for that one program. I think that's the way you should read it.
Okay,
so
well, that's what I'm asking.
Catholic Charities budget.
Okay, so it's for that particular program. Okay, thank you. That answers that question. Who on the list of over-target requests, the ones that were and then weren't supported by the budget, who ordered those? Does having a higher number on that list or lower number on that list mean that it was a higher priority for somebody, whether that's the committee or you or Joe? In other words, how come the amount of the food pantries, that $5,000 is number 7, OTR number 35. But, you know, does that mean that it was somehow a lower?
No,
We
don't order our OTRs.
I think those guys at that end of the table.
It's a really good question because we thought the same thing too. It's simply the order that they appear in their request. This is one of the few areas where the agency itself has not established priorities, nor have we. This is really just the order that they were presented. That's the way you should read this.
Right. And if I could just say one, when we talked to Joe about the three OTRs, specifically for the Red Cross, Catholic Charities, and Southside, we did, because we weren't quite sure what the amounts for those were, that really didn't, in our minds, include the food pantry $5,000 because we were pretty sure that they could use that. So.
Okay. So then on the food pantry, is that one agency or is that a total?
16, yeah. I believe it's 16 pantries and Loaves and Fishes, and it's divided by about 16, and then goes to the line of credit, the Food Bank of the Southern Tier, for about $18 a pound, for food, not $18, you know. Anyway, cheap food,
right.
A ton. No, a lot of food for very cheap.
Okay, so maybe then this is not the best example for me to use then for this next question. Because, once again, I find myself wondering, when I want to ask the question, how do I want to prioritize a particular over-target request here within the context of our $160 million budget? You know, can we prioritize an extra $5,000 for food? It helps to understand, for me, to understand, what does that mean to this agency, if it were one agency? For the others would be a better example. But, how much difference does that make within the context of their total budget? How do I get at that?
When they divide that up, they can all have more food available for more people come into the pantries, pretty much.
Well, I know, but I guess that $5,000 out of how much do they spend a year on food? Well, is that out of $1 million?
The pantry distribution network is difficult. We try to collect what we can from them. It's a lot of donations, contributed food, free food, gleaned food. They don't have too many. They have some federal grants. They have a little bit of that that gets spread around. It's a
ballpark number. How much money do they have?
I don't know, but we could probably get that number from the Food Bank of the Southern Tier.
$1 million?
Only
$20? What?
We can find out how much the Food Bank of the Southern... We can find out how much gets spent by the Food Bank of the Southern Tier.
All right.
Okay, and again, similarly for the others, if I knew a little bit more about where this fit in the context of their bigger budget, it just would help me decide.
Pam.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to pass, but I do have to say that we are getting into the minutiae that we were trying to avoid by going from agency to agency. So I would hope that we don't do what you were suggesting, Carol, because it's such a small amount of money and the need is so great. I think we should just move on.
Yeah, I call that the weeds. Go ahead, Martha.
Yeah, they get the award, as usual, for the most words per dollar.
Yeah, right. I think we're done here. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Appreciate this.
And we have...
take us a minute to come in. Get out.
Solid waste and TCAD, neither of whom have an OTR.
Well, we can give them one.
Sorry, Barb.
Good evening.
Good evening, Barbara.
Okay, let's see. What do I do to push forward? Oh, there we go. Okay. This year's budget, I've actually reduced the amount of expenditures. So it's actually a minus 0.18% change. No local dollars. Influences, this hasn't been the best year for recycling revenues. Paper has been lower than projected, and we will see a negative as a result of that. It's hard to say, but we're probably looking at overall a negative of about $150,000. It's likely that our budget will be negative, but not by that amount. So that we'll be relying on the fund balance. The good news is that this is the first year that we're really seeing a rise in the commercial recycling tonnage. That's good for us. We make more money on the commercial recycling than the single stream that goes out of county. And we actually are really getting a lot more participation of larger businesses, and that trend will continue. You heard enough from me last night about food scrap recycling. We have plans to increase our capacity at Cuga Compost. You've already approved the contract to do that. They'll be getting a new permit. Residents, businesses, which include for residents, single-family homes, apartments, and we'll be having drop sites in various areas in the county, and particularly focusing on the rural areas. Will all be happening. Businesses, we've got about 120 businesses already over the last 5 years that have participated in the food scrap diversion, and that continues to grow as well. So that's it in a nutshell in terms of anything that's important. No change in staffing, and pretty straightforward. I have proposed some fee fees that, you know, the fee schedule this year, the annual fee will stay at $56. And we are anticipating the reduction in the debt service. I'm looking at you, Mike, because we're finally at a point where some of us have been around here for a long time, and the 20-year debt is retiring. There is some additional debt that we've picked up with the recycling center. And, of course, there will be – there always are cost of living increases in our contracts. And so we are – I've done a 5-year budget, and it does look like that we will be able to reduce the annual fee in the coming years. Obviously, that depends a lot on recycling revenues and tonnage that we pull in. But, you know, and also the growth of our programs, how fast are we going to grow the diversion programs, because what we're all about is materials management and waste diversion with a goal of reducing our waste by 75% by the end of 2016.
Questions for Barbara? Michael.
Two things, Barbara. One, how's the price for commodities for metal now? We're hearing everybody advertising on the radio.
Yeah, metal prices are stable. They're good. And metal prices are good. Paper should rebound in the next 6 months. It already is actually slightly increasing. Plastic markets, not so good. Well, certain plastic markets. The old 1 and 2 containers are good. The rigid plastics and plastic film are weak right now due to the complexities in the Chinese green fence that I talked about the other day. But I think we're looking at a more optimistic situation for next year than we've had this year.
And
anyone else? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
The other thing was every year you give us a nice 5-year projection chart.
I do have those available.
Can we have
this year? I'm looking over at Kevin and Joe. They can make those available. They've reviewed them.
Thank you.
So that would be no trouble. That'll give you a good insight. We will be going over that later in the year after the budget's approved at the committee level and into next year as well.
It's always very helpful.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Frank, go ahead.
Thanks, Jim. Barbara, thanks for all the information. Do you have a copy of the budget?
I do.
I'm on Section 4, page 366.
I don't believe I have it numbered. Oh, okay. Perfect. Thank you. Just share with me for a second.
Sure.
Are you looking on your iPad, Frank?
Section 4. Yeah.
366.
All right.
What's your question?
Down at the bottom where it says revenue.
What was the number?
Oh, wait a minute. Give her a
366.
Chance. 366.
I'm turning, Frank.
It's account 8163.
I'm right there.
Okay. Down at the bottom on the revenues, the local revenues are down by 150,000. Is that what you were just talking about, the recycling?
No.
Oh.
What that represents is, for as you know, we built quite a fund balance over the years. Well, this year we're taking less from that fund balance, 212,000, to balance the budget. But I will say, in future years, based on our discussions, Joe and myself, we will not have any money left. We'll be at the 10% to take, nor do we want to continue to do that practice. So that's also going to be reflected in the fact that we'll need to come up with that money from the regular budget.
Where does the solid waste fee appear as a revenue? Maybe you can help me.
It actually appears in every budget other than the disposal budget. So every budget relies on either recycling revenue or annual fee revenue to balance the budget.
So it's just apportioned.
Yeah. When you see the 5-year budget, it's really well organized on those 4 pages on the last page, and it'll show you, roughly speaking, We are taking, we're going to be needing to utilize roughly half the budget, $2.9 million is going to come out of the annual fee, and the remainder is coming out of the disposal fee.
Thanks.
Anyone else? I think we're done, Barbara. Thank you very much.
Wonderful news. Thank you very much.
Thank you for sticking with us over there.
I always have more work to do.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. TCAD, Michael. And Heather.
Before I start, I'd like to introduce what TCAD has been referring to as our fifth employee. That isn't her name. It's Christine Fu Lam, who started yesterday.
Okay.
And this is the first time we brought her out in public, and we're hoping she comes back to work tomorrow.
Well, I don't think I would have brought her to a county legislature meeting if you wanted her to come back tomorrow. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
But we're really excited to have her on board. That's one of the many things that we talked about as we were going through the process to get the county funding commitment for 5 years. I'm going to go through most of these slides very quickly because they're all going to be familiar to you. If you have any questions about this, please ask the county administration. Heather's tried her best to explain these forms to me. I don't understand them. No OTRs. I think that's a good thing. And here's where we're headed with your help. As you know, we want to create a balanced revenue model. The county made the significant commitment to support TCAD at one-third of our budget. That's the bottom line that's going up. The middle line is the employer investment history and projections, and the top line is the revenue or fee-based income that we receive. Most importantly, we're in the midst of a capital campaign. We've hired an outside consultant who is going to help us raise 5 years' worth of commitment for one-third of TCAD's budget to match the county's one-third, and we think we're in good shape with a fee-based income one-third. So we feel very confident about our revenue model going forward, and I think the county needs to take a lot of credit for setting the standard for that, and we're leveraging your commitment to raise private sector commitments. We've talked about this in the past. We spend most of our time working with existing businesses. We think our future is really working with startups that will be started by existing entrepreneurs. And our consultant who did the feasibility study, the feedback they received really focused on the need to improve tech transfer efforts. So that's something that we're going to be talking about a little bit later. Here's our economy, and again, this is why we focus on manufacturing and high tech. We've talked about this before. It's a surprisingly large part of our economy. These numbers usually shock people because they typically think that the tourism industry is either the first or second. It's a critically important industry, but as far as the dollars it brings in, it's much smaller than most people had thought. This is how we decide what types of companies to work with. We want to work with companies that have growth potential, that pay good wages, offer good benefits, wide range of jobs, so people that perhaps aren't college-bound have opportunities for jobs where they can learn on the job, companies that are committed to our community, and making sure that we have a good return on our investment. We're investing scarce community-based resources or delivering infrastructure to companies. Programs and services, you're aware that we manage the IDA, the Development Corp, Heather still works on Empire Zone. Even though no new companies can enter that, it's still very labor-intensive. We manage very, very progressive revolving loan fund program. Martha Armstrong manages the Tourism Capital Grants Program. And we serve as a conduit to external funding, particularly regional council. We've been very successful helping both local public and private sector entities gain grants from the regional council process. Some brief numbers on the IDA, Development Corp, probably some important numbers to look at are the property taxes that are being paid both to the county and other taxing jurisdictions, very significant return on your investment in us. Brief summary of Empire Zone. Again, no new companies can enter that, but we do deal with 43 businesses each year, helping them report to New York State. Tourism capital grants, over $1.5 million that we've brought to the county for funding, and our revolving loan fund program, which we hope to grow. I mentioned conduit to external programs. I serve on both the regional council and its executive committee, so we're very active with that, and we're very hands-on helping local both not-for-profits and for-profit companies access that. Empire State Developments, the State's Economic Development Corporation, and then a couple other programs. Some of the initiatives that we've launched, and again, some of these we've spun out, like the CUGA Venture Fund, which is now building its third fund, some of which we've brought back in-house, like the Finger Lakes Entrepreneurs Forum. Very, very involved in air service issues, as you might expect. I currently chair that board, and we're wrapping up a strategic planning process. And we've launched a foundation, a 501c3 corporation, in order to take advantage of the popularity of economic development from national foundations. So we hope to attract some funds for both entrepreneurial development and workforce development. We provide a lot of planning and study services for the community and the county, typically things that your own planning department might have to spend time and energy on. And this is the last slide, and probably the one that, if you want to spend the time, we can spend the most time on. Startup New York, you've probably read about in the papers. It's a brand new program that, in theory, will be launched in a few weeks. On Monday, we had these three key people from the state, the president of Empire State Development, the executive director of the Commission of Private Colleges and Universities, and the person that wrote the legislation that now works for SUNY. He was in our community, small group meeting with local potential customers of that program. And we're probably the only community that's had the benefit of those three people coming to our town. We think this has tremendous potential. I'm reading the draft rules and regulations in the next few days, and we'll be providing input back to the state. It's very complex, and I think it's going to evolve much like the Empire Zone program did. We see Emerson as a key program that we're working on. We've already located funds to help the developer with some of the study work that they'll have to do, both engineering, architectural, and very important to us, community engagement. Community revitalization is important to us. We're working with the town of Lansing, of course, the city of Ithaca, and any urban area or community area that needs help, workforce development. We're co-located with that staff, as you know, air service. We hope to acquire improved service, either bigger aircraft or more flights to places like Detroit, because those flights are very full right now, or perhaps new destinations to less congested hubs than places like Philadelphia. And tech transfer is probably the most important thing that we're devoting energy to. We think that any good new jobs that are created in our community are going to be companies that make stuff and export it to the rest of the country or the rest of the world, and to do that competitively in upstate New York, they're going to have to use technology to do that. So we're spending a lot of time working with Cornell and regional programs to help entrepreneurs start businesses, grow businesses, and hopefully keep those businesses here in our community. And again, tech transfer was the key issue that came out of our capital campaign feasibility study that local stakeholders said that we needed to work on and focus our efforts on. And that's going to be a primary component of our work plan in 2014. So with that as the last slide, I or Heather would love to answer any questions.
Frank, go ahead.
Mike, first, I'm glad to see you, or hear what you said about tourism jobs. There tend to be a lot of them, but they don't always pay very well. And the second largest part of that pie chart you showed us was manufacturing mm-hmm. and high tech, 18%, if I read it right. However, on the slide that says programs and services that had the 101 projects as the first bullet,
mm-hmm.
The third bullet, first question, can you define for me? We all use this phrase, high-quality jobs. How do you define? What does TCAD, how do they define a high-quality job?
Well, we don't use the term living or livable wage, but statistically, the wages that the companies we have helped pay to their employees average around $19 an hour with very high benefits. We did a benefit survey. But more important than that, we look at the range of jobs. So if we had, say we owned a 10,000 square foot building and had either a software company where the average wage was $100,000 a year for software engineers, or a light manufacturing company where the average wage might be $30,000, we would want the light manufacturer because that's the kind of company that's providing jobs to the people in our community that need them the most. And not that they're mutually exclusive. We work with all companies, but I guess my point is we look at trying to match the kinds of companies we work with, the kinds of jobs they create with the people that need the jobs the most in our community.
The second one has to do with the air service. Earlier tonight, I know you were detained or you would have been here to listen to Bob Nicholas, who was the first presentation at 5:30, tell us about what was going on with the boardings and whatnot. And he said that things are down.
Employments are down, yes.
He was talking about developing a marketing plan to do some more promotion. Because you chair the Air Services Board,
mm-hmm.
Can you say something about, are you guys going to be involved with what Bob is planning to do on marketing? Or?
Very much so. The original Air Service Board was called the Air Service Task Force, which TCAD created back in the late 90s. So we're very committed to our airport. It's the way most of our companies get to customers or investors or suppliers. One of the problems with a number of employments is a capacity issue. Airlines are cutting back on smaller airplanes and just parking them. So if we had more airplanes or bigger airplanes, employments would go up. The flights to Detroit in particular are virtually full. So what we want to do is encourage Delta, when it brings larger regional jets online and they're buying them, is to dedicate some to our community because airlines don't make money from flying from places like Ithaca to Detroit. They make the money when those passengers get to Detroit and then go to Asia or some other place. And that's what our community is all about.
The runway here, when we built the terminal, we had an 800-foot runway, and I think that's still true. We couldn't handle tandem-wheel planes in those days. Have the aircraft changed enough? You say we might get larger aircraft. How many place aircraft are you looking at?
Some of the new regional, the regional jets that fly here are 50-seaters. Airlines are now buying regional jets that are 75, 80-seaters. And our runway length won't be an issue. We used to have 737s, DC-9s, Fokker 111s fly in here, so we can deal with those.
Some of us remember DC-9s.
Well, I'm sure you remember getting on a triplane, Frank. And
front seat. Front seat.
Martha, and then...
Did you wind it up?
Go ahead, Martha.
I think Leslie was first, but...
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. You need the wing walker, Mike.
You can both go at the same time.
Go for
it. Thanks. This slide here, Michael, is that what's the time frame of these?
Virtually forever. That goes back into the deep, dark recesses of the IDA and when Frank was a member.
That long ago.
The dark period.
All when right. We were making money and you would take some fees out of
it. Tech transfer, how do you propose to ramp that up? What do you think is your...
Well, Cornell is certainly trying its best to get better at tech transfer, but tech startups or small companies that are expanding need technical assistance, the right kind of money at the right time, the right kind of space, and a workforce. So we're involved in all of those things. Heather manages a very unique revolving loan fund that can take the risk involved with loaning money to a company that doesn't even have revenues yet, and we hope to build that fund. We think Emerson and some of the other underutilized buildings in town will be a great place for high-tech entrepreneurs. So those four areas that I mentioned, we're very involved in all of them.
So is there outreach to researchers at Cornell, for example? I mean, how do you go? Are you working on that end of the pipeline?
No, we're not, although we do partner with Cornell on events that are targeted at entrepreneurs. They might be students or faculty, so we're there to talk about the kinds of services that we provide in the community. But unlike venture capitalists, we don't walk the halls of the research labs looking for deals.
Let's talk about that another time, because I think that there are a lot of people who have ideas and they wouldn't necessarily see themselves as entrepreneurs or mm-hmm. or come to an event or anything, but mm-hmm. they have those kinds of ideas.
So that the tech services, transfer service was one of my questions, but I want to go back to the revenue model slide. And if you can just, it was like the second slide on your third.
Yeah. I did it.
Could you please explain that one to me again?
Okay. This slide starts in 2009, but if we went back further, it would be a more balanced model with to support TCAD's budget with about one-third county, one-third fee-based income, and one-third employer income. Over the years prior to 2009, our deal flow from the IDA and now the LDC was so high that the county decided, why should we use taxpayers' dollars to support TCAD when there's such a high fund balance at the IDA? So the blue line, which is county support, was higher, but it went down very low, as you can tell, to about, I think, $7,250. The middle line is the green line, which we've always had, and that's employer investment in TCAD. But we weren't all that aggressive in getting the employer investment because we did have such a high level of fees going to the IDA and now including the Local Development Corporation. 2012, that deal flow started to dry up, mostly because Cornell and, to a lesser extent, Ithaca College stopped building stuff with debt, and they're not going to build big buildings with debt for a long time. And that's how we were making all those fees at the IDA and now the Local Development Corporation. So our model starting in 2014 is one-third, one-third, one-third. We, in fact, think that our employer investment will be more than one-third, not by a lot, but that's our goal. And just as we tell the entrepreneurs and companies we work with, they should have a balance of customers, we kind of listened to ourselves and said that we're in a precarious position relying on fee-based income, which also could be wiped out by bad state legislation, which that
all right,
often happens.
You. That helped. I have one other question, and it's just a refresher. Why can businesses no longer enter, give into the Empire Zone?
Why don't I let Heather answer that? As you know, Heather used to work for your planning department, and we stole her to be the Empire Zone coordinator, but she does many other things now.
So the legislation that allowed businesses to apply and participate in the Empire Zone sunset in 2010.
Okay.
So we started certifying businesses in 2006, 2007. Today we have about 43 businesses that are grandfathered into the program. Once from the date they were in, they would get 10 years of tax benefits. So we have businesses that are continuing to get tax benefits, but we just can't allow new businesses to participate.
Thank you.
And one of the problems with the Empire Zone program is that early on it was bad legislation which allowed bad communities to do the wrong thing. And by the end of the Empire Zone, the legislation had been fixed, and it was a wonderful program, but politically the state felt they just had to get rid of it.
Thank you.
Carol.
I had a question about the chart about the economy, the pie chart. I think that's two pages forward. Yeah. Can you explain what this is based on, and in particular, I see ag there, but I assume that's also included in the local sectors, and I assume that, what is this?
Implan. So this is based on Implan, which is a national econometric model. It's the commonly used model for communities, states, regions to study their economy and do sector analysis.
Is this not the same thing that came to the ED committee?
Yes, it is.
But in local, I just don't want people to, I mean, you mentioned, you pointed out that visitors and tourism is 2% there. I assume that some of the local sectors include that. And then it looks like agriculture, fish, and forestry combined are less than 1% of our economy. And I assume that there are a whole lot more than that there's more agriculture here. Maybe I'm wrong.
What this is telling us is the value of each sector in terms of how much money it brings into the community. So agriculture might be us growing stuff to sell to each other, but it also is us growing stuff to sell to customers outside the community. And those slices of the pie tell you how big each sector is.
And local sectors would include some of those same things?
I'm not sure. I think in the Implan model it probably does. And there probably should be another piece of the pie that's a gray area, like health services, where we provide health services to local people, but they also come in from other counties.
I think this is sort of a joke question. I'm looking at the budget page 85. Thanks to the task force that we had last fall, that's where we are with the whole revenue model here. So we've got local revenues is $150,000 for 2014. That's from the tourism budget. And our target amount there is 68,111. Remind us what the our target number is going to go up. Am I right? What's in the plan, five-year plan we agreed on?
It does go up in 2015. I just scribbled down what the respective shares are. So in 2014, 150,000 will come from room tax. It drops then in the next year because, remember, they took the 150 out of the reserves. So that share, room tax share of the contribution goes to 60,000, then 125, 200, 205. So that's the room tax contribution. The expected one-third contribution total of the county, I haven't done the subtraction yet, but the total of contribution in 2014 is as you see in the budget, 218.5. That rises to 224,700, 231,400, to 238,300, to 245,500. And the difference between those two numbers is the county target contribution. And I shouldn't even call it that, the county, the non-room tax contribution to TK.
I guess it'd be great to have a revised page of this showing those numbers.
Just easily do that. Sure.
Thanks a lot.
Dave, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I just had a question for Mike. I wanted to know, sounds to me like you're planning on converting the Emerson building to a high-tech incubator. Is that correct?
We're working with a private sector developer who is currently in the last stages of the first phase of his environmental work. His plans are mixed use that would include housing, office space, light manufacturing, and high tech. We're hoping that part of the light manufacturing and high tech would be dedicated to startup tech businesses. We think there's a demand for that, even with Cornell's plans for an incubator in the city of Ithaca. We think, particularly for companies that need wet lab space or fabrication space, they're going to need a more of an industrial site. So we do think that there will be a high-tech startup component if that building is redeveloped, and we believe it will be.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you.
It is over.
I was going to move with you,
Chairman. You got it.